of the chairperson of Trade and Industry, as well as my fellow chairperson of Science and Technology, Dr. I may not be able to pronounce it quite right, but Dr. Nkobo. Now, it would be an order for me to apologize not only to my fellow chair, but of course to members of my committee and other members for my late arrival. I won't go into a blow by blow because I don't believe in wasting your time. But I hope we can continue, and thank you to all the members who've arrived here early in this weather. Thank you very much. Thanks to the department as well, DTI, Science and Technology, and so on for being with us here so that we can learn a little bit more. The way we'll do things is that I'll chair the presentation by DTI, and my fellow chair from Science and Technology will chair the presentation from Science and Technology. I don't want to expose my lack of knowledge in that area to anyone at this moment. So, and thank you very much to the committee secretary who held the fort and to the whip of my committee, Honourable Ntuli. So without further ado, let's welcome, is it Miss Majaja? Miss Majaja here. And if you would just, for our benefit, use some layman's terms when some of these fancy words come up, just explain it a little bit more carefully. All right. Thank you. Over to yourself and your team. And you can see that we are starting 15 minutes late, but we will give you that time, the extra. Thank you.
Good morning to all the members for the both parliamentary portfolio committees, DTI and Science and Technology. As my chairperson has mentioned, I'm Ms. Nomfuneko Majaja from the DTI, responsible for a unit called Advanced Manufacturing and issues of space for within this unit. Today I'll talk about the South African National Space Policy, which was adopted by Cabinet in December last year and was launched by our former Minister Mpatra in March this year. But in my presentation, I would link the policy to the program strategy, which was developed by the DST. These two documents serve as the guiding framework for the space arena within the country. And fortunately, they were actually developed around the same time and were presented to Cabinet at the same time and were approved on the same day. So within my presentation, I will sort of do that link because this is a presentation we did together with the DST, but my DST colleague will add on a number of areas that I will leave out today. In front here, I've got a number of pictures that shows facilities within the space arena. This first one is a picture of SAC. Fortunately, those stakeholders are here today. Here is SAC is Satellite Application Center, and this one is SALT, the Southern African Large Telescope. This picture shows the space applications, a combination of a number of applications that we can see here. This is showing a number of, it's urban planning, urban development is showing the buildings, the houses and so on. And here we see a cyclone developing. And here we see a fire, so there's a number of applications that we can get from space. I have an overview which includes introduction, the statement of the policy, the principles of the policy as well as objectives, then the general implementation guidelines, and how are we going to monitor, evaluate the implementation of the policy. My introduction will include the space application, which means what can space do for us here on Earth. These are some space applications. This one that is coming out here is showing navigation and positioning of traffic, air traffic, maritime traffic, as well as road traffic. And here also space can help us to get communications and broadcasting services. Space is also useful in monitoring disasters. This picture is showing us the progression of fire. The red line is showing where the fire is actually gone and how far is it going. It can actually assist us in getting this information and managing the situation quite quickly. Space can also assist us in managing our natural resources. The three pictures, actually four, starting from this one, show some vegetation that has been on this area over time. But as the picture goes down, we are seeing the green part, which is the vegetation, is diminishing over time, and with space you can be able to tell that. There's another picture I will show later on, which is quite familiar with us. But this one also tells us that space is a big stimulus for high-tech industry. The picture here shows a control room, which you can find in many high-tech industries, in telecommunications, in fire stations, and a number of stations, whether it's coal-based or it's nuclear. And here is a picture of the satellite with the engineers around it. And also here is another high-tech engineering. I believe this is testing and integration. Another important application here, we see on the side the environmental change over time. It's actually 6 years. This is the picture of Midrand in 1985. And this is picture of Midrand 6 years down the line, where we see that the vegetation has diminished, and we see a lot of development that has taken place here. We had to explain then why do we need a space policy, because the legislative framework was actually promulgated in 1993, but not much took place after that until recently. So it was necessary for us to actually explain why do we at this point in time need the space policy. We realize that we require a more coordinated and a strategic approach to space activities, because the country has a number of public institutions, departments that are involved in space activities, but all these are not coordinated in their way of working. They have their own policy frameworks and decisions. And that this actually fashion is wasteful in government resources. We also noted that the country is having an increasing reliance on space technology. We have also noted that our government is committed to space. It would like to resuscitate the space program. And our government is participating increasingly in various international space fora, such as the UN Corpus, the ITU International Telecommunications Union, and many others. And all these required us to actually be strategic and more coordinated in how we do things here in South Africa. Where is the space policy coming from? What is the legislative framework that is giving birth to the policy? It's the Space Affairs Act, which I've mentioned, that was promulgated in 1993. It mandates the Minister of Trade and Industry to determine the policy to be followed in the Republic. This we have done in consultation with the council and other relevant departments and their various ministries. What is the policy doing, or what is it expected to do? It's expected to provide guidance to all the stakeholders in the South African space arena, be it private stakeholders, be it public stakeholders, but they are expected to be guided by the policy. The policy should inform participation in the space activities. As I mentioned earlier on, that many government departments have been doing pursuing their space activities in various corners without any coordinated direction. So the policy has to promote improved coordination and cooperative governance. It has to do this by supporting and promoting relevant scientific research, promote capacity building, as well as stimulate innovation, competition, and industrial development. Now I will link the space policy to the space strategy, giving a frame of reference. I've mentioned that the policy emanates from Section 2 of the Space Affairs Act, and the policy is actually laying a foundation that is embedded in its guidelines that I will talk to within this presentation. The program strategy of the DST is in response to their 10-year innovation plan, for which space and technology is one of the five grand challenges. The strategy is building on the policy foundation and draws key priority program areas, three of those which are followed by thematic areas, which I hope my colleague will talk to. The governance issues, how will they be attended to? We've got the policy and the program strategy, the national instruments that are driven by the two line departments. The implementation is guided by these national instruments, and it actually rests with relevant stakeholders and national agencies. More on coordination will be driven by the South African National Space Agency, which was also promulgated, I believe, early this year, will serve as an institutional vehicle for this coordination. And coordination will also be promoted through regular monitoring and evaluation of the program at regular periodic intervals. Now we will go on to the policy statement, which is drawn from the introduction that I have given, that of having a variety of institutions that have capabilities within the space, which is scientific study, engineering, exploration, and the use of space. The policy statement also is hinging on noting that space science and technology has become an area of strategic importance for the country, because we are critically relying on this technology, as we have seen the number of services that are derived from space technology or from satellite data. So it becomes important for us to maximize the benefits of space science for sustainable development. And for us to do that, we require this guiding framework to coordinate and all the activities. I've talked to the central institutional framework, which will be driven by the agency under the DST. Now we will go on to the policy principles.
I'm sure that's a reminder to all of us and to switch off our cell phones.
The policy principles are actually six of them, but they are grounded from an overarching principle that actually states that all the space activities that South Africa will pursue should contribute towards economic growth and sustainable development, which actually says that we will concentrate on space activities that will assist us for civilian applications and for socio-economic development. These guiding principles talk to our commitment as a country to use outer space for peaceful purposes. I mentioned the other time that we are a member of the UN Corpus, United Nations Committee on Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. So we have to adhere to that. And specifically because our program is for civilian applications. The other principle is South Africa's commitment to the development and maintaining of space capabilities, also ensuring that the South African stakeholders are responsible users of the space environment. So that means all our stakeholders, be it government, private, they need to comply to the international treaties. But the international treaties, we will need to domesticate them before they can be able to comply to those. We are also committed to promote R&D in space science and technology, as well as achieving greater levels of self-sufficiency and international competitiveness. We are committed to engage with other countries in mutually beneficial cooperation, such that we can be on a path to self-sufficiency. Over and above the six principles that I have mentioned, the policy has important objectives, which start with the one of promoting capacity building and emphasizing on the historically disadvantaged individuals and institutions, as they have not been involved within this high-tech sector in the past. We also intend with the policy to facilitate provision of appropriate space capabilities. We need to build on the already existing ones, but develop them further. That we will do by fostering a robust science and technology base within the country, whilst we are creating a supportive regulatory environment, which is an environment that is actually within the hands of the South African Council for Space Affairs, which is also established by the Space Affairs Act and being housed within the DTR. The policy will promote the development of a competitive domestic space sector. We have a small domestic space sector at the moment, but we are intending to support it to develop into a competitive industry. We will do all these by cooperating with other nations, as I have mentioned, of the world that are already space-faring nations, but our cooperation will focus on the South-South relations, as our government is holding fast to that. We realize that there's a need for greater awareness and appreciation of space technology, of what space can do for us as the society. So there is a lot of awareness that is required to be done by most stakeholders. In the center of the objectives, we see the need or the crux of the policy being to improve coordination in the South African space arena so that we can maximize the benefits, we can mobilize the resources and work together going forward. I will now talk to the alignment of the space policy objectives and the space program strategy. As I've mentioned that the space policy serves as the foundation for the space arena, and the strategy builds on this foundation to come up with the various programs or the priority areas that the country will concentrate on within the next 10 years. Improving coordination within the space arena, the strategy also talks to organizing some current space and technological activities into strategic programs. As I've mentioned, that there are various agencies and facilities out there. The strategy will talk to how do we group them together to be and categorize them into strategic programs to achieve coordination. How are we going to facilitate provision of appropriate and adequate space capabilities in the country? That will be done by developing products and services that will respond to the needs of the South Africans. So the products that have to be developed will be demand driven by the needs of the users. Another objective is the one of promoting capacity building. The strategy talks to strengthening training and technology transfer programs to enhance this. How will we foster science and technology? Academic institutions and science centers will be highly promoted in actually engaging in this R&D. More on our alignment of the objectives, we talked to a competitive domestic space sector that we want to see one day within the country. This starts from a local private space science and industry sector that we will develop, as well as an export market for satellite equipment and services. Improvement of cooperation with other nations will be done through partnerships with established space-faring nations, as I've mentioned, and that we will also respond to challenges and opportunities within Africa. Awareness and appreciation. Local awareness will have to be built, including the benefits of space within the country. Then we now come to the implementation guidelines, which tells us how are we going to do all these objectives? How can we achieve these objectives? Then we've got some guidelines that assist us in achieving the objectives. Starting with cooperative governance and coordination, the Space Affairs Act will guide us there, and it tells us that the GTI with the Council deals with the policy as we have done, with regulatory aspects, with advocacy matters, and lead international agreements. The GTI within its mandate as an industrial development government will work within this mandate and liaise with other relevant government departments. The National Space Program will be led by the Department of Science and Technology in consultation with the regulator, which is the Council. Department of Communication is another important stakeholder here, as they are responsible for space communication. National Treasury, of course, for financial resources, because without their participation here, this program will not be successful. Department of International Cooperation will support and facilitate international cooperation in line with the GTI, as it will lead this work and other relevant departments. More on seeing the coordination within the space arena, we have mentioned these various role players that require a coordinated effort. This will be done by creating interdepartmental forums involving relevant experts and through establishing a number of focal points within government clusters. more on achieving coordination would be done by creating an interdisciplinary cooperation among public sector institutions and agencies, in particular with space research and earth observation will be encouraged, and I'm aware that this has already started with a number of fora that are led by the DST. More on our implementation guidelines, we'll talk to our second objective, which is the development of capabilities within the country. The human capital is a critical capability that this country requires, but we need to have guidelines as to how are we going to develop these capabilities. As I've mentioned, that they will depend on user needs. The national requirements will actually be driven by government needs in terms of a scientific, a technical, and industrial area. And we will ensure that we develop these locally, and if we can't, we will acquire some abroad through some strategic partnerships. Another critical capability for the country is accessing space. That means being able to send some satellites out there, whether we do that by pursuing commercial means or strategic partnerships, because it's actually crucial to access space such that you can have your own data that you can use for a number of applications, rather than procuring data from commercial satellites, which is quite costly for the country. How will we strengthen space science and technology base? R&D activities will form cornerstones of the space program. As we have mentioned, existing capabilities that are in science councils, national facilities, scientific institutes, within various agencies, they should be used to maximum effect within the space program. Another important capability lies within the universities. So the university research community is representing another core strength of R&D for the country and for the space program. In terms of developing the space infrastructure, we have mentioned our possessions of infrastructure for ground segment operations, which our SEC stakeholders will talk to, satellite assembly, testing and integration facilities. We also have facilities for support flight testing and space launch facilities, but this infrastructure will require to be reinvigorated going forward, as some of it has not been used for some time. I hope we realize that the space infrastructure is quite costly and specialized and will be required to be used in an optimal manner by both public and private sector users. So that's the coordination that we also use, such that it doesn't lie idle for some time without being used, and it requires to be used at a steady level in order to maintain adequate levels of expertise from within the country in terms of human capability, in terms of safety and quality standards. Those are some core characteristics within the space industry. Promoting domestic space industry, as I've mentioned, this lies within the mandate of the DTI. At the moment, the DTI is commissioning a research study in support of the National Industrial Policy Framework, which talks to the country looking at intensifying its industrialization drive, such that we can move towards knowledge economy, such that we can move towards high-tech industry, rather than concentrating on the primary economy or on the economy that is not involved in the beneficiation and value addition. So this study will actually tell us the capabilities and the various interventions that we can employ going forward in developing the industry. It's important for us to note that we will require to build the capacity by ensuring that there is maximum participation of the private sector in most public sector-based projects where possible. There's always a need to create a regulatory environment within most industries and within this one as well, and that will be done, and it's already done by the council. An important factor is seeing that we will manage innovation and technology transfer to the space sector and to other related sectors. As I've mentioned earlier on, that the space sector is actually a stimulus for a range of other industries such as aerospace, ICT, as well as TV and film in areas where space can actually develop high-resolution cameras that could be used in TV industry as well. The issue of awareness is also crucial, as not many people of our society know about space and what are space benefits and what space can do for us. The Act mandates the Council to promote the awareness and also inform the citizens about its activities. But all government departments and their agencies that are involved in space activities should work towards a sustained effort to communicate to all levels of the society what space can do for us. Private sector participants, especially those that are publicly funded, should have a component of the activities to support awareness. A collective effort within this area would be greatly encouraged to reap maximum effort. Then talking to our last objective, which is enhancing international cooperation, we've talked to pursuing mutually beneficial areas in consistent with foreign policy as well as international obligations. The space treaties we will be talking about tomorrow talks to these international obligations that South Africa has to abide by. South Africa will promote enhanced cooperation with African countries, as it is important for us to start within the Africa, as well as emphasizing on the South-South relations, including using already existing relations such as the ESA. The DTI and the Council will lead these international agreements, start with relevant departments in the case of specific agreements within their mandate. And lastly, the monitoring of the policy is our responsibility. And we will ensure that there are mechanisms that are put in place to ensure monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the policy. The policy will be reviewed after every 10 years or at any time before that, as it has been determined by the Minister of Trade and Industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Majaja, who is the Chief Director of Advanced Manufacturing and the Industrial Development Division. Now, what we would appreciate from yourself, Chief Director, some of us have met some other members of your team, but as you can see, there are a number of different committees here, or members from the different committees. If you would be good enough just to introduce them to the House here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. With me here, I've got my colleague from the DST, Dr. Val Monsanto, sitting behind me. I hope I know everything. I think this is the stakeholder from the university. Hermann Stein. Next to him is Ron Olivier. He is from Sunspace, which is an industry that is based here in Tampa. Next to Ron is Mr. Bart Sivias, he is also from Sunspace. Next to Mr. Bart is Raul Hodges. He is from Satellite Application Center. I think also in front of Raul is Wadile Monteferi. He is also from Satellite Application Center, but he is also now seconded to establish the SANSA office, South African National Space Agency, under the DST. I think I've mentioned everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think I certainly know members of my own committee well enough, but just very briefly, members would be kind enough for the benefit of our participants and presenters to just simply indicate, for example, Jones Hubs, Trade and Industry, and then if we'll move and start with the Honourable Marais.
Because from a base station, trade and industry.
Marion Shin from Science and Technology.
Sandy Kalyan, Science and Technology.
Chris Ntuli, Trade and Industry.
Thank you, and on my right.
With Juni, Science and Tech. Doris Mungwan from Science and Technology.
Linda Dunja, Science and Technology.
Mama Fana Nyama, Science and Technology.
Mam Bekozi, Trade and Industry.
Right, we have two members who would be.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, Zitlangoma.
Shikamama Mawasa, Trade and Industry.
We have two members who would be joining us a little later. It's got caught up one way or the other between doctor's visits and travelling, and we'll introduce them as they arrive from Trade and Industry. Now, it's just 5 to 10 as we look at this, and the programme you have in front of you indicated a discussion afterwards, but it would be more advisable if we can just do a 10-minute sort of just perhaps clarification, comment, and so on at this point before we engage with the presentation on science and technology. So if we can see some of the hands. I certainly noticed here on the right, Honourable Kotsi. And would you just help me again with your surname, ma'am, Honourable?
Dunjua.
Dunjua, right, thank you. And on my left? No one at the moment, thank you. Right, so it's over to you, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I know we have been briefed previously on some other matter on the this international agreement. But Chair, I saw in the picture that was showing vegetation, which means then that over 6 years, you know, vegetation was somehow destroyed because of space, maybe because there is no policy, or perhaps the policy is not tight enough to have control. Chair, I see this, it's concentrating a lot on international space. My concern is there anything that really concentrates on domestic? There are a lot of private people who are using space. And perhaps those communities around. I know, for example, in Stellenbosch, there is, you know, floods going around there, and somehow it becomes a nuisance to the communities around there. Is there something that protects those communities? Because I found it at some stage, even the municipality, I'm not sure whether they had any power except that a small fee is paid by these private people using that area and flying around, but more being a nuisance to the communities around, and communities feel helpless in actually protecting themselves. You find people coming from all over the country and have converting there and coming to fly as a hobby. And what policy is there that perhaps is applied? Is there anything that's applied by the municipality? Are those national policy protecting those communities as well, or concentrate only on national? Thank you.
Yes, I just hope we all understood space to mean out of space, you know, beyond some sort of point, beyond the plains, just a little bit further than we are just flying this morning. So as long as we all have that understanding of space, then I think we're on the same wavelength. Yourself, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. You'll pardon some of us in terms of ignorance on this subject. I will just start by, I think the last Honourable mentioned the municipalities. For me, I just wanted to have an understanding what will then be the role of municipalities in some of the areas that have been said, like most of the land, the vegetation, whatever is being eroded, houses are being built, malls are being built. What is that? I'm asking that precisely because of that slide, and I think the Miss or Mrs. Majaja did say that there is development that is happening there. So that's why I want to know what's the role. The second thing, Chair, is what is then again the role of the environmental, in all these things that are happening, what is then the role of the environmental department or whatever? Universities are doing research. Who monitors that research? Is it a research that is widely known? And then, that's why my first remark was, pardon some of our ignorance on some of these areas, but if universities are making a research, which are those universities? Is it a research that is accessible? Is it a research that the country is then able to benefit? And it is scary. We know. It's a fact. And I don't think it's a myth that greater part of the land in this country is owned by private, by people from outside the country itself. I always make a joke and say, I wonder where I've got my property. I wonder who owns it. I don't want to wake up and be told that there's an owner which is staying in Canada or in Britain. Now, in this research that is being done by universities, what is it that is we are likely to then be exposed to? Is accessible to everybody? The last thing was on page 27, Chair, that monitoring and evaluation is to be done every after 10 years. We are in the 15 years of our democracy. Has this monitoring and evaluation been done on this subject in the last 10 years that we are coming from? And if it is there, where can we, will the Department of Trade and Industry being able to can we get hold of it? Some of us are newcomers. I'm sure the old people that have been here, they will know about this, but as we are saying that it is a subject that not everybody has then been exposed to, And my last question, which is always my passion, I'm finishing. In this subject, how is trade and industry going to assist the Department of Education, both basic and higher education, in ensuring that ordinary children, black, whoever, that have never been exposed to this, they understand that from the early age, not when they are adults, not when they go to tertiary school, but starting from, because that's where we are to ensure that we develop scientists from whatever level, from top up to the... Thank you, sorry for taking long. Thank you.
I just wonder just at this point, so that we just clear the ground a little bit here, and maybe I shouldn't be using the word ground, but clearing the space. If we could ask you, Chief Director, Ms. Majaja, just in a sentence or two, just to clarify exactly what you mean when you talk about the space policy, national space policy, exactly what it is, so that we have that clear understanding before we get into any further questions. We're all just on the same wavelength, as it were. Could you do that, please? Without answering all the questions right now.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can explain what is the National Space Policy. The National Space Policy is a guiding framework of how space activities should be undertaken in the country.
I'll just stop you there. What space? Space in my backyard or space somewhere beyond the stratosphere?
Yeah, space out there beyond beyond the airplane, beyond what we can see with our naked eye, where we send the satellites to gather data for us. To have us do things here on Earth.
We'll be coming back to some of the questions afterwards, but we still have a few more. Yes, we have another question on the right here, please.
That's why many people are confused about which space you are talking about. Probably if you had said outer space, it would have been easier because they would have understood that you're talking about activities in outer space.
We proceed with the questions, please. I think there was one more out on my right here, Honourable Doris.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, it was in line with the last question that was asked by the committee as to if maybe she can explain later. I'll ask the question later.
Yes, Honourable Member.
Thanks, Comrade Jones. I'm getting confused now. And once I get confused, I'm going to have a problem. I'm going to get out of this meeting not having understood or grasped anything. Chairperson there speaks of an outer space. Even the presenter here has alluded. But then I'm asking myself, how does vegetation, if we talk outer space, how does then vegetation come in? So that's where my confusion comes now.
Really highlighted. And I just want to explain to presenters here, we had a 67% turnover in the fourth parliament of members. And really, most of the members in trade and industry are new, including myself. I'm sure the same applies to science and technology. So when we say we want to get an understanding quite clearly in terms of this briefing, Ms. Majaja, and I must say, look, it is a very it was a very good briefing. But if you can just get, I think, wonder if I'm pronouncing the name right here. When I very bad at this, is it the Honourable Nkumi? Paul, yeah. The thing is, I usually have called you by your first name and now I'm in committee and have to do something else. My apologies. You see, the point that we're trying to explain to you is you need to explain why vegetation, you know, is this the application of what you're talking about? Can you be clearer about those issues when you deal with your responses? And perhaps the chairperson of science and technology can help.
Yes, I think the challenge that we're having is that we have most of the members are new. The same thing in my department, in my portfolio committee. I think I'm the only one who has been in this committee. So really, although some of these issues we've dealt with them, I'm briefing from Sunspace, and so members are new. But I'm just going to give a brief so that at least we're all at a par, but I'm sure I'll give the detail to the presenters themselves. You see, when we talk about space policies, we're talking about how to use, say, satellites up there in space to be able to observe things here on Earth, like you are showing here at the presenter, and how we can utilize the knowledge, the information that comes from the satellites in helping us down here. How to explore the oceans, how to explore even the soil, the land here using the technology of space science. So I think basically that is what we're talking about. On the 15th of September there is going to be a satellite, the first from South Africa, which is going to be launched in Russia. And Africa does not have satellites to help Africa. That is why even now you have to go first to Europe before you go to Africa. If you move from here, you have to cross over because they don't have sometimes the technologies to be able to monitor the flights from here to there. So you've got to go to Europe and come back from Europe to Africa. I remember recently when we went to Algeria, we had to go to Paris. And then first we went to Frankfurt, and then we came from Frankfurt to Algeria. When we were coming back to South Africa, to go to Paris, and then from Paris back to South Africa. And that is nothing else but a problem of space technology in Africa. But I think they are going to give you the details, but this briefly is what it's all about.
I think on that note, Ms. Majaja, if you can just, I think that that's given you a framework in which to make your response.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and Chairperson of Science and Technology, for that explanation. It was really very, very good. I think I will sort of round off some questions that talks about the other government departments, the role of the municipalities, the concentration of the international fora. And then I'll ask my colleague from the university to talk on the question on the research and the universities. And maybe my other colleagues from Science and Technology and SEC will add one or two things. But basically, what we are talking about, as the Chairperson of Science and Technology has mentioned, is how space can assist us here on Earth to actually observe the number of things that we'd like to observe. For instance, the picture of Midrand in 1985 and teacher of Midrand in 2001 were two pictures that were taken by satellites during these two times. So that is actually helping us in seeing that there has been development that has taken place between this time period. This development also shows us that the environment or the vegetation that was there is no longer there. So it's helping us, the information that we get, the data that we get from satellites is able to help us to actually plan better and prepare ourselves for whatever challenges that we have. For instance, the issue of the floods and the municipalities could also be very much assisted. I mentioned here that you could use space, for instance, for disasters. So as the satellites are observing what is happening here, for instance, this one is about the fire. You are able to get that data immediately because the satellite is actually beaming over a large area and will tell you, will give you real data within a short space of time. For you on the ground, for the municipalities, to act quickly, saving the people from the fire, saving the people from whatever disaster, whether it's flood. That's basically how satellites and information coming from the satellites will help us. I will answer the question of the monitoring and evaluation. I've mentioned that the policy will be reviewed, the policy itself. That means the content of the policy, the objectives, the principles will be reviewed after 10 years. But the monitoring and evaluation will take place at periodic intervals. It could be after 2 years or 3 years, after we have seen that there has been some progress. But it will not actually take 10 years for monitoring to take place. The reviewer that will take place in 10 years is the one of the policy document itself, which will be assisted by the periodic evaluations and monitoring that will take place over time, that means after 2 years or 3 years, and so on and so forth. One other thing that I would like to emphasize is the fact that as this is a national space policy for the country, there are various other government departments that are implementing the space policy. The DST is one big stakeholder in that, as they are going to be as well establishing the national space agency that is going to serve as an institutional vehicle to coordinate the various activities that we have talked to. The other departments are communication, the provincial governments as well as the local government are able to use this information that is coming from the satellites to be able to work on their various program. Maybe let me stop there for now.
At this point, I'd really like to hand over to my fellow chairperson, because this is a joint meeting, and I'm sure he will call the presenter from Science and Technology to make a presentation. So it's over to you, Dr. Nkobo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. To give us the opportunity today also to sit together and discuss things of issues of common interest. I think just as an overview, we are likely to be having our satellite launch in September 15 in Russia. And so I think a lot more interesting things will come out, because the Department of Science and Technology has promised that it will try to expose members to seeing the launch and getting some explanation of things that are very important. But generally speaking, space science is an applied science over a variety of areas, including defense systems, including health, including agriculture, including poverty. So it's a very wide application. It is appropriately thought to be also housed in the Department of Science and Technology. I can tell a lot about it. I fortunately was trained partly in space science, because if you study nuclear, you automatically have to study space science. You have to understand fluid mechanics, the higher level of fluid mechanics is aerodynamics, and the moment you study aerodynamics, then you study a lot of space science, how objects were floating in fluid space or fluid water or fluid air, some things like that. So I'm just giving an overview, so that it's a very, very wide-ranging area. But I think for members, they don't need all that deep science. We only need to understand policies that are related to the governing the national issues connected to space, relations with other countries, and so forth and so forth. And I think that is exactly basically what the presenters are trying to present here. Of course, there are very important questions that have been asked by members here, that where Africa is probably not very well, very well based in the technology, then other foreign people will come and exploit our space, because one of the important things about African space is that it's clear, it's got sun, and so they are able to therefore beam themselves beyond the limits of space and be able to read stars that are very far located. So as a result, there is what they are talking about. We've been to Sutherland there, and indeed in Sutherland there was even a case that went to court, because the local community was feeling that it was disturbed, and I think one of the developers wanted to build a golf course there, but he said he was unable to build a golf course because the golf course is going to interfere with the monitoring of space from SALT. So members are asking very relevant questions here, just to say the least. So you need to assure them when you present, when you respond, because this was just an interview. We are still going to have a discussion. But there are many important areas which the members have touched on, and that is exactly relevant for members, because they are policy makers. They have got to know that communities are protected as we develop these outer space research capabilities and so forth. So without wasting time, I'm going to give the presenter from the Department of Science and Technology, Dr. Mumsami, Chief Director.
Thank you, Chair. I understand the challenge that's come through this morning. So maybe I should start off by just explaining what is a satellite and how we put it into orbit. If you can appreciate the fact that the Earth is a sphere, think of the Earth as a ball. Let's say I have a baseball in my hand. I throw it across the room with a certain amount of energy, and it lands on the other side. If I give the baseball a little bit more energy, it lands further. And I carry on in that vein. But if you think, because the Earth is spherical, at some point, if I throw the baseball with enough energy and height, it will start falling towards the Earth, but the Earth starts curving away from the baseball. Okay? So the baseball will be continuously revolving around the Earth. It's trying to fall towards the Earth, but the Earth is curving away from it. Have I got it? Okay. So essentially what we do is that's exactly the principle we apply in terms of putting a satellite in orbit. So it's continuously orbiting the Earth. Okay. And so what we do is with the satellite is we put in sensors on the satellite. And in the case of SumandilaSat, and I'll talk about it just now, there's a number of sensors. But the kind of sensors that we normally put is an imaging payload. For example, you would have a camera on the satellite that's looking towards the Earth. Okay, and the camera would have different sorts of resolution, but essentially what you're trying to do is to take images on the surface of the Earth. And this is essentially where the different applications come in. For example, monitoring vegetation, and I'll talk about some of the applications just now. And now my colleague, Ms. Majad, has indicated to you the policy rationale as to why South Africa is adopting a national space program. And it's essentially about leveraging the benefits of that space can offer in terms of socioeconomic, addressing some of the socioeconomic challenges. And so I'm going to talk around those lines. But essentially the presentation I'm going to give this morning is going to talk very briefly about the Mandela Set. In fact, my colleagues at the back of the room from Stellenbosch University and Sunspace can do better justice to the technical aspects of the satellite. And then I'm going to look at some of the developments in space science and technology with respect to what the Department of Science and Technology is doing. And then give some of a kind of a motivation for ratification of the space-related conventions that we are considering at the moment. If you take some Mandela Set, you would note that our kind of space program ended around about the early 90s. So a lot of the human capital and some of the expertise have been sitting in the system. And since the launch of Sunset and now looking at the Mandela Set, these programs have kept the human capital and the expertise more or less afloat. But you need to do a lot more in terms of human capital development and developing technology. Because there's a lot of socioeconomic benefits you can derive from investing in satellite technology, as an example. So what the Department of Science and Technology did was, the Mandela Set, was to invest an amount of roughly $26 million. And that was essentially to get us back on the path of satellite manufacturing and so on. So the Mandela Set was essentially designed, developed, and manufactured. And currently sitting in Baikonur, waiting to be launched. And essentially the launch date is on the 15th of September. But if you look at the Mandela Set alone, as I've indicated, you can put a number of sensors on the satellite. So these are the range of sensors that we have on the Mandela Set at the moment. It's a remote sensing images. It's essentially capturing images of the Earth as it orbits the Earth. And so it will take images of, as it comes over South Africa, it will start taking images. And then we also have a very low-frequency wave experiment. You know that the Earth is protected from radiation from the sun because of the magnetic field. The magnetic field actually stops some of the radiation that comes from the sun. So this experiment is essentially looking at some of the disturbances in the magnetic field as the magnetic field starts to vibrate and so on. And then we have a software-defined radio that's self-explanatory. And then we also have what is called a forced vibration string experiment. And essentially what we're trying to do with this particular payload is trying to understand the vibration properties of the string in space. I must mention that experiments behave very differently on Earth than in space. In space we have, I won't say zero gravity, but what we call microgravity, whereas in space we are forced onto the ground because of gravity. Okay? And there's a whole lot of consequences of microgravity in space. For example, the plants on Earth, if you grow plants on Earth, they essentially, the roots would migrate straight down in order because of the gravitational effect. Whereas in space, there's no particular orientation. So plants behave very differently. We also, the astronauts, as an example, there's huge problems with bone loss. Because, as you're sitting here, the pressure of the blood on your head to your feet is different. Okay? In space, because you don't have that gravity, there is no pressure difference. So all the blood tends to rush to your brain, as an example. So if you look at somebody, most of the astronauts, when they land in the space station in the first few days, you'll see their faces all swollen up with blood, and some of the blood has left the legs, and they start losing bone mass and muscle mass. So there's a whole series of complications with working in space, and that's some of the experiments that are being devised to understand the effects of space on astronauts, especially when you start talking about missions to the moon or missions to Mars, as an example. Those are quite serious things that we have to consider. And then there's the radio amateur transponder, and that's essentially for the amateur radio community. Okay, as I've indicated, with these sensors, you essentially have a number of applications that you can use. And the DHT, as a first round, have identified a number of projects that we are supporting that kind of links to the Mandela site itself. And these are the list of projects that we're looking at. For example, mineral mapping, remote sensing air quality, so monitoring the air quality as it passes over South Africa. Identification of validation sites. Now, validation is an activity that's more or less confined to the satellite itself in terms of calibrating the sensors. So what you do is you have validation sites that you use on the ground to make sure that the information that the satellite is giving you is of the correct information. And you have to do that on a regular basis. Change vector analysis for surface and groundwater monitoring. So you can actually look at surface features to identify water sources and so on. There's an educational component to some Mandela sets. There's the development of CDs that will be shipped out to school kids to make them understand what our satellite operates and so on. And then evaluation of vegetation-specific applications, and I think my colleague, Ms. Majaja, has indicated one of those kind of applications. And then we also have another outreach initiative called Sumbandila Bafundi. That's more a program that's geared towards school kids as well. And then the last one is actually the calibration and validation of the sensors themselves. Now, what I want to point out is that this satellite is not what we would call kind of a flight-ready satellite. It's more a technology demonstrator to ensure that we get back in the path of developing the satellite. Now, we have capabilities in the country in terms of Sun Space and Stellenbosch University, and there are other universities that are trying to come on stream as well. But we're trying to bolster that, that capacity that we have, the expertise, and try to build something out of that. Okay, I just want to move to the actual development in space science and technology in terms of what the Department of Science and Technology is doing at the moment. There are two key drivers in terms of the whole space program. The first one is the DST 10-year innovation plan, which is approved by Cabinet. And in there, we have five grand challenges. And one of the grand challenges is space science and technology. So essentially, what I'm presenting is responding to that 10-year innovation plan, of which space science and technology is one of the grand challenges. And the second key driver is the Space Agency, or the South African National Space Agency. As you would know, that the bill was approved by the President on the 15th of December last year, so it's now a national act. The strategy was also approved in December, the 3rd of December last year, together with the National Space Policy. So essentially, these drivers have prompted us to come up with a national space strategy. Now, you may ask, what is the difference between the space policy and the space strategy? Now, the policy is essentially, as my colleague had indicated, a guideline. It gives you a guideline to all the stakeholders that are operating in the space sector as to what are the limits in terms of operating in that sector. Whereas the space strategy is more geared towards the implementation part of the policy. So the latest update in terms of the strategy and the agency is that we have crafted a 10-year implementation plan for the space strategy. We have presented to the DST Executive Committee, but we were asked to revise it because, with the capital-intensive nature of space, we need to look at long-term investment. So we were asked to look at a 25-year time horizon as opposed to just limiting it to 10 years. We started to look at a technology road mapping, but we understand that DPI is also looking at some kind of an audit because they would be looking at the a national development, industry development framework. And so we're going to be liaising together in terms of the technology road mapping. And then in terms of the space agency, we put out an advert for appointment or nominations for the board of directors, and that's currently underway at the moment. Okay, I just want to touch on the space strategy in terms of what is the mission. And essentially it was to address national imperatives and policies. Now, you would know that in many quarters of government, there are various policies that are being crafted. For example, we have policies around climate change, environmental issues. Now, space provides a convenient tool for us to be able to monitor monitor and evaluate some of the issues that affect those policies, so that then you can then update those policies appropriately. The one thing with space and climate change, you know, from space there are no national boundaries, so you see the problem in its entirety, not just limited to national territory. And so the way we're going to do that is to simulate sustainable space science and technology capability, and that's talking to the expertise, the technology, and so on. And then also growing the human capital and applying the scientific knowledge, and that's where the application component of space science and technology comes in. There are essentially three goals for the National Space Program. The first one is to capture global market share for small to medium-sized space systems. And now we believe that there is a niche market that South Africa can tap into. And so that's one of the primary goals. And then it's also to empower better decision-making through the integration of space-based systems with ground-based systems. Now, there are many government departments that use satellite imagery at the moment for their own decision-making. And you'll see in the next few slides how that has come through in this national strategy. And then the third goal is to use space science technology to develop applications. And the applications are geared towards socioeconomic development. Now, there are essentially three key priority areas for the space strategy. The one is environment and resource management. And you'll see just now what we're talking about. The other is health, safety, and security. And then the third one is innovation and economic growth. And essentially the way we cross these key priority areas and these specific user requirements is we had a whole host of government departments sitting around the table in one room and essentially telling us what they wanted us to deliver from the space program in terms of their own mandate. And the net result of that is for environment and resource management, these were the key priority areas that we identified. Environmental and geospatial monitoring, looking at ocean, coastal, and marine management. You know that South Africa has more than 32,000 kilometers of coastline. And how do we manage those resources, for example? And space is one of the convenient mechanisms of doing that. Land management, rural development, and urban planning. This is very critical for poverty alleviation and tapping into the challenges that we face in the rural communities. Topographic mapping, hydrological monitoring, looking at water resources, climate change mitigation and adaptation. The unfortunate thing with this particular aspect is that although South Africa, or Africa for that matter, contributes the least towards global climate change, it's the most affected because of the poor infrastructure in Africa. And so this is something that has key priority in terms of monitoring global change. And then meteorological monitoring, and that's essentially your weather monitoring, which is using satellite platforms. And then on the health, safety, and security, we looked at disaster monitoring and relief as one of the issues that we should be focusing on. We already have a disaster management center in South Africa, but we were looking at improving and strengthening what we have at the moment using satellite information. And then hazard forecasting and early warning. The first bullet point actually talks to more response to a disaster. But what we actually need to do is also be able to forecast when these disasters are going to happen. Using space technology, you can actually figure out that, look, there's a dam, we expect so much of rainfall, could possibly see some kind of flooding occurrence. Okay? So those kinds of forecasting is possible using space.
Like a tsunami.
Tsunamis as well, yes, absolutely. There's a whole host of disasters that you can focus on. And internationally, they look at earthquakes and tsunamis and so on. Cross-border risk, and this is the South African police, look at the customs and what's flowing through the borders. Disease surveillance and health risk, as you know, we had a cholera outbreak not long ago between the borders of Zimbabwe and South Africa. And space can help in terms of improving, also looking at forecasting some of these, looking at precursors on the ground. And then asset monitoring, if you have huge fleets of trucks that are moving around and you want to be able to monitor the location of your assets, you can do that from space as well. Regulatory enforcement, and then defense peacekeeping and treaty monitoring. As you know, South Africa plays a key role in peacekeeping in the continent. And to use satellite imagery to support the operations on the ground as well. And then innovation and economic growth. This satellite application has huge potential for tourism and recreation. And as you know, that is one of the prime sectors of the economy that we're trying to boost at the moment. And then communication. In terms of applications, this is by far one of the biggest revenue generators, telecommunications. Then we're also looking at space science and exploration, and that's more cutting-edge experiments like the...
That's right. Yeah, I think just for the interest of members, our previous committee, when we went to Sweden, I'm trying to show the defense part of how it can be used. The Swedes were showed us all that different corners we could see in their what you call control room. All the, I mean, the ships that are in the and in the oceans, moving. They we could even see South Africa at the gate of Dinard, because they now own some greater share of Dinard. We could see it from Sweden, even a person walking into Dinard. Yes. So I'm trying to show how much important space technology is.
Just tag on the ship applications. You could, for example, monitor oil spills from ships as they're moving across the ocean. And you can actually pick up the exact location of the ship and take appropriate actions as well. So there's a whole host of applications that we're probably not doing due justice because of the time constraint. And then we're also looking at space technology transfer and spin-offs and then development of the space industry for our future space program. Okay, essentially four areas that you can focus on when you're talking about a space program. The one is Earth observation. And that's essentially having a camera looking down. Okay. Then you can also look at communication and then navigation and positioning. Most of you, majority of you in the room, use GPS technology in your car to kind of navigate your way around traffic in the urban areas and so on. That comes from space, by the way. And then the last one is space science and exploration. I'll just talk very briefly about each one of them. Establish an Earth observation data center.
The Israelites, they have built what they call, I don't know if you've heard about them, the Tepper Hawks and City Hawks, that fly over 8,000 feet and are able to come down, they call them vertically taking off and landing, VTOLs,
yes,
which can go up and down and park in the parking base of cars.
Yeah.
So that's how you can use also the...
And then establish an Earth observation data center with respect to Earth observation stuff. And so essentially what we're doing here is trying to give access to the different tiers of government, whether you talk about national, local, municipal, to give them access to satellite data. So there's a whole archive sitting at the Satellite Application Center in terms of satellite imagery. And, you know, most of the government departments can have access to that. So that's something we're trying to promote at the moment. And develop a platform to integrate satellite and in situ data. So satellite data by itself is probably not as useful as merging it with ground data as well. So you want to be able to use both sets of data together. Develop medium to high resolution payloads. Establish centers of competence. And the centers of competence we're referring here are what we call optronics, and that's essentially like a camera sitting on your in the satellite. And then we have something called synthetic aperture radar. Now, essentially what that is a sensor that sends a signal to the ground and looks at the reflection from the ground. And from that, you can look at the topography of the ground, you know, the height and so on. And then develop the African Resource and Environmental Management Constellation in partnership with other African countries. This is kind of advancing, although not as quickly as we had hoped for. This is a relationship between Algeria, Nigeria, South Africa, and we're still waiting for Kenya to come on board. And we're hoping, from the South African perspective, we're actually ready to sign an agreement. We've gone through the legislative the processes. And so we were hoping that by November of this year, we would sign together with Algeria and Nigeria this agreement for a constellation of satellites where each country would put a satellite in the constellation. So we essentially would have three or four satellites that are kind of orbiting the Earth, and they would be looking at resources over Africa. And so essentially this is what we want to do, is to have a kind of an archive where all the satellite data goes in, ground-based data, and what we call the SIOS portal. And from that, it gives you a platform to do research and development, and then allows for processing of the data, what we call a data processing center of competence, and then also to look at human capital development. Now, I haven't spoken about human capital development or international relations in depth because of the time constraint, but there is a program in terms of what we're going to do for human capital development. Starting right from the schools level, for example, setting up what we call space camps. This is quite successful abroad, and so we want to emulate some of those successes. And then, in terms of the actual goods and services, there are three categories. We're looking at public goods. Now, there is a model that is currently adopted in India for what is called the village resource centers. So in the very rural parts of India, the rural communities have access to satellite imagery, which allows them to use the imagery to locate water sources. The satellite imagery also gives them information as to what we call precision farming, when to fertilize, when to water, and so on. And so that improves the sustainable livelihoods in the rural communities as well. Then we have something called core goods, and that's essentially addressing the needs of national government right down to local and municipal level. Okay. And then we're also promoting some kind of commercial aspect where private sector can come in and look at using some of the satellite imagery for commercial purposes. Okay, on the navigation side, develop a navigation augmentation system. We're not going to put in a constellation of satellites into orbit to help us, or build another GPS constellation. What we're going to do is to improve the accuracy of the GPS, or the GLONASS, or the Galileo. Now, these are all different constellations of satellites. GPS is an American constellation. GLONASS is a Russian constellation, and Galileo is a European, which is still to come online. There's also other constellations, the Chinese and the Indians as well. But what we're going to be focusing on is improving the accuracy of the actual position location. For example, if you're using GPS, you have a kind of an error of plus minus 5 to 10 meters. So you could be off by 5 to 10 meters. So if you wanted to use GPS for landing an aircraft, you need to land it within a meter. So you need to improve the accuracy of the GPS signals, for example. So what we do is we put in augmentation systems that help us improve the actual location. And then communications. As I said, this is by far one of the most important in terms of generating revenue. And so there are two particular streams. One is developing what we call low data rate applications. And these can be used in the rural communities. So we're looking at things like e-education, telemedicine, rural communication, disaster support. Okay. And then we're also planning to look at a small geostationary satellite. I should explain what a geostationary satellite is. If you put a satellite in orbit, okay, there's a particular orbit where, as the Earth rotates, the satellite is always above the same point. Okay, so it's called geostationary. Okay, so you use that as primarily for communication. So if you look at, if you have a satellite dish at home, have you ever wondered why your satellite dishes all point in the same direction? Because there's a satellite sitting in geostationary orbit that's roughly in that spot. Okay. So we use geostationary orbits for communication purposes, as an example. And then on space science and exploration, most of you would have heard of the square kilometer array. And so we're looking at how space science and technology can improve our land support for us to win the bid for the square kilometer array, and also to establish a number of centers of competence. So packaging all of this together, what I've just said just now, we're going to be focusing on the three key priority areas, which is environmental and resource management, developmental innovation and economic growth. Then we're going to look at how the various thematic areas that I've just mentioned are going to help us support those key priority areas. And
you said something about the square kilometer. I'm sure it would be important to say more to the new members about what also the square kilometer array is going to do.
Okay. The square kilometer array is the next biggest, or will be the biggest radioastronomical telescope. Now, essentially, given our curiosity, we always wonder as to where it all started. where's the origins of the universe? And we know that the universe is expanding. So if you're going to look further back in time, for example, what you're seeing from the stars now is not as they are now. It's probably a few light years, a few thousands of years ago. Because the light takes a certain amount of time from the star to arrive on Earth. Okay? So actually you're looking back in time. So anything that you're observing, like if you're seeing a star right now, that the light that came from that star actually left the star a few thousand years ago. Okay? So what we do is we set up telescopes and radio astronomical telescopes to help us look further back in time. Now, we are kind of limited in terms of our technology, in terms of how far back we can look into time. Okay? So what we're looking at with the square kilometer array is to have a number of antennas that if you put them together, they collectively amount to a square kilometer. Okay, so you need a very big, large antenna to actually look further back into time. So what we're doing is we're taking the square kilometer and we're chopping it up into little bits and pieces and we're stretching it out over the Earth. And so, for example, the baseline in terms of the core will be in South Africa, but it'll extend, the remote stations will extend that up to Kenya, for example. Now, why do we do that in terms of stretching the baseline? If you want to see, let's say if you want to look at a distance to one of those light bulbs, you can do that by taking, measuring the angle from one position and measuring the angle from a different position. And by simple trigonometry, you can get the location. And the bigger that ground distance is, the better it is, the better you can resolve the distance to the star. And so, essentially, we're competing to host the square kilometer array that will allow us to look, you know, into the origins of the universe further back in time.
All that I wanted you to explain was exactly that, that what they see now, it left some 300,000 years ago, probably, some of them. That's why they are able to see them now. So if we are able to have a square kilometer array telescope which is able to beam 1 million years before, then we are able to see many other things that we have never seen. That's what I wanted you to
So this is kind of breaking new science, essentially. Some of the foundations, as we put in, is infrastructure, international partnerships, and human capital. And I'm not going to go into in depth because my colleague has already spoken to that. There are, given what I've just spoken about, there's an intention to put in satellites in orbit. This is kind of preliminary kind of scoping as to what we want to do in the next 10 years. As I've indicated, we've been asked to extend this time frame to 25 years. So there's probably a few more satellites that we'll see in that time frame. The reason why I put that is to make the case, the motivation at the end, which I'll come back to. Okay. Just to touch on the space agency, we have an establishment office at the CSR, which we set up in August last year. So essentially, the establishment office is helping us in terms of the actual establishment of the space agency in terms of, you know, putting the policies of crafting the strategies and so on for that. And then finalization of the business plan is what is being done at the moment in terms of what we're going to present to National Treasury for the space agency, the business case. I've also mentioned the appointment of the board of directors. We've had the adverts go out and that's currently underway. The appointment of the CEO will follow immediately after that. And then there's migration of facilities, the Satellite Application Center and the HOTEC facilities that will fall under the Space Agency. Now, you might know that there is a facility in the Western Cape, in Krabal, called HOTEC, which was essentially built for assembly, integration, and testing of satellites. So what we're doing at the moment is acquiring that from the books of Dinell and looking at upgrading.
Maybe also you need to clarify, members, what is it?
HOTEC is actually a facility that was built pre-94, but it was kind of closed down around about 92-93, I mean, we the facility was essentially built for, you can see in the picture, slightly to your left, there is a big structure called the Green Sat. That's a model of what called the Green Sat. That was the first South African satellite that was built, but never launched. So that facility was built for the assembly, integration and testing of those satellites. Okay. So what we're doing at the moment is to take over the facility and upgrade the facility so that we can start building, assembling and integrating and testing our satellite that I've just shown you just now for the next 10, 25 years.
If members remember, that's the satellite we talked about during the workshop. Those who already were with us in the workshop, that we need to visit and see that place. So is the correct person to deliver us there?
Thank you. Arrange that. Okay. The other facility is the Satellite Application Center, which is based at the Hubble Space Tour. And essentially they do telemetry tracking and control. I'm not sure if my colleagues will be doing a presentation or so you will hear more about that. So I'm not going to talk in depth about that. Okay, so motivation for ratification of the conventions. The first one is the liability convention. And essentially what it says is to impose a liability to damage that's incurred by a launching state. And by launching state, we mean a state which launches or procures a launch. For example, with the Mozilla set, we procured launch services from the Russians in terms of launching in a Soyuz rocket. So we can be defined as a launching state as well, South Africa. Okay. So essentially, if something happens to that satellite, let's say detaches from the rocket and falls in Kazakhstan and falls in somebody's house and kills 10 people, it means that South Africa is essentially liable for damages to those people. Okay. So that's essentially where the liability convention comes in. It's kind of a tricky one in terms of how we define launching state, okay? Because it can mean a whole series of things. The actual service provider providing the launch vehicle, that's the missile, or procuring the launch service, like South Africa is doing, or a facility where the space object is actually launched. That's a little bit more complicated. For example, the Europeans are using French Guiana to launch their Ariane rockets, as an example. Okay. There's two aspects to the liability convention. The one is damage in airspace. And for example, if you launch a rocket with a satellite on it and it bumps into an aircraft, as an example, then we have what is called liability to compensate in absolute. That means you don't need to go into court to actually prove that your rocket knocked into the aircraft. But the second one is actually damage in space, which is a bit more tricky. We did have a situation in February this year where an American satellite, the Iridium, collided with a Russian satellite. It's actually a Russian satellite that was not operational anymore. And it's been going back and forth as to who is actually responsible. Now, it's very difficult to prove something that you haven't seen in space, as an example. So, in that case, it's imperative to prove the fault. And the reason why I've picked on this is that if we're going to be launching satellites, this is going to be very critical for us. Okay? The liability convention. Now, my colleague has mentioned the fact that we're engaging in international relations. Now, we did sign an agreement with the Russians, intergovernmental bilateral agreement on cooperation and peaceful use of our space. And one of the tricky issues was the liability convention. Okay. Who should be responsible for what? For example, if Russia launches a satellite of the South African space. So that's going to be very critical for us in the future. The second one is the registration convention. There's an obligation to register all space objects and information about every space object. And so one of the things is that we should take note of is in terms of orbit is that it's a limited resource. If you look at the satellites that are currently in the geostationary orbit, they're actually crowding at the moment. With time, some of these satellites will start interfering with each other. So you need to take stock of what's out there, and what frequency they're operating and so on. So actually registering your satellite is quite important in that respect. And then obviously the mitigation of space debris, especially if your satellite has for an extended part of lifetime, you still need to be able to track the satellite in terms of potential collisions in the future. Now, as we're starting to embark on our national space program, these kinds of interventions are quite critical from the operational aspect.
Thank you very much, Chief Director. I think we'll have some 10 minutes break and have some quick relief of ourselves. I don't know if there is coffee already outside. Yeah, between there is some coffee. And then when we come back, we will then allow the time for question and clarifications. I think that that time will also allow general even other discussions. Oh, no, we still have other people to present. Mm-hmm. We'll just need clarification quickly, and then we'll continue. Then after we finish all the presenters, then we'll have discussion as long as we still have time. I think we can adjourn for 10 minutes as from now. Thank you very much.
Intellectual capacity, and now he's wondered for. And say, oh, good. Chairperson of Science and Technology, I was saying I'm not sure if I could even pronounce some of the questions without the benefit of your intellectual support here. If you could take a seat. Yeah, and I'm sure the gentleman who was making the presentation, I wonder if he got lost.
Honourable members, I think we can ask for clarification just for 10 minutes. Remember, we will still have discussions when we finish all the presentation. But wherever members feel that they need some clarification from the last presenter, they may please do so now. I have Honorable Dunjordan, Honorable Muchumi, Honorable Mubaso, Honorable Lyon, in that order, the chair, in that order. After the chair, Honorable Nguyen.
I think the chair, first, I just want to comment the last presenter. I think his presentation was a bit come to the level of some of the things that one said. Having said that, three clarities. Are municipalities empowered to be able to do health, safety, and security, to be able to have understand the early warnings? And if they are not, what is then the supposed to be the role of science and technology? Again, on health, safety, and security, defense, safe peacekeeping, treaty, and monitoring. I'm just sitting there wondering, we're all crying, we're all screaming loud about crime. I know in Johannesburg there is a center where they are able to see if you are. Is it, can that be expanded to other areas? The last one is the issue of telemedicine, which is very much interesting and are you able to monitor and give a detailed report on in which rural areas is it and how is it really working? Are people in the rural areas benefiting? Who is controlling that? Is it public health? Is it private health? Is it people from overseas? What is happening in South Africa of late now? So that's those were the last three questions. Just to say, Chair, in the last presentation, there's a question that has not been answered about the universities that are doing research. That has not been answered, and I hear Ms. Machacha saying there is somebody from from the university, and that question was not answered. I would be very much interested to understand, to really understand, know which are those universities and how then do you get that information. Thank you, Chair.
Don't you have this copy which shows some of the presenters? It's here, University of Stellenbosch.
Many papers in front of us.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, but they are here, the University of Stellenbosch. One of the questions, I just want to, but I'll leave it with the presenters, but I was talking to one doctor scientist who told me that actually now, in terms of telemedicine, they are able to even do an operation from far. I don't know, but he said, as long as I don't know, it does not involve what they can do it to telemedicine. So, but the presenters are going to tell us how telemedicine is applied these days, technologically. Right, the next member.
Thank you, Jefferson. Let me also join the team on the song of commenting the presenter for the presentation. What I'd like to find out is on page 13, liability convention. It's just a clarity-seeking question. I asked it, but I still want more clarity. When are conventions binding? Conventions binding, because this is aimed at protecting the misuse of the damage to the space, I think. If they are not binding, according to my understanding, maybe, why not come up with a bill which then will be enacted into a law that will ensure that the space is being protected through enforcement of that law, because you can't enforce the convention. That's what I want to say. The convention here, is it enforceable? Because there can still be a misuse of the space or damage to the space that what would really force whoever to take responsibility of it, because there's no law that doesn't do then complement Catherine to compensate or whatever.
Okay, and the presenters will note that also. They will respond to you on the time. Who was that question? You? Was it? I can't remember. That's why I said people must memorize that.
Okay.
I can't remember how the order.
No, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I just want to explain that mine is more about the lack of knowledge, not about the legal knowledge, but just lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. I want to have some clarity. Actually, according to the presenter, the mission, according to the mission statement of the space agency, is the growth of and human capital and the application of scientific knowledge. If that is done by the Science and Technology Department and the the implementation of policy is controlled by DTI, and some of the issues affect the Education Department, how does it work? And we are saying we need to have this the education at the level of at primary level. How does it really work? I'm somehow confused when it comes to that. And the application of these implementation policies in the rural area. Because that's where most of the people are, and they don't know anything about that. For instance, there was this launch of the satellite in the Northern Cape. How many people from the Northern Cape and local communities were there? And how do we make sure that
the information filters down to the people at that level. So that's why I'm saying most of it's through lack of knowledge. And my second question is it's a point you raised, Co-Chair, about some of our science here controlled overseas. We spoke about denial, and you said about 80% of that is controlled by Switzerland. And how many of our local communities know about that? And if that is done by Switzerland, if that is done by Sweden, so how do we expect those people how do we expect implementation of skills transfer to our own communities here in South Africa? That's what Ken said.
I'm sure, actually, those questions really belong in Parliament. It's we who must ask those questions to appropriate people. So I'm sure the officials of the department they are supposed to go to politicians, ministers, and we discuss with them about those are policy matters. Yeah. Anyway, but I'll allow, because they interact with Treasury, with Cabinet, so they'll tell us about what exactly happened at Cabinet level. Who was the next one? Another question I asked, which you asked, also very interesting, the coordination. But I think that is where the ministry in the presidency about coordinating activities of the board, that's where it comes in. That's exactly what, again, was identified at policy level, that we need to have such, kind of a commission or body which must coordinate activities, because our experience here in Parliament has been that people come, departments come, entities of the department come, and they talk of the same thing, but they do not know that they all are talking of the same thing because it's not coordinated. So I think that's a very also relevant question. But I'll allow the next speaker to ask questions. The next member to ask questions, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know how much of the old science, I would like to call it that, is taken on board as science and technology, as trade and industry deal with these things of learning and whatever. I mean from the stories we're told from childhood, there would be a cheaper way to fly, a no expense way to fly, actually. And these things cannot be told from one community to another without an element of truth in them. Now, how much research is being done? How much is being done to approach these people so that they can open up? So that we can end up knowing the science they are applying. Maybe we can end up coming here to Parliament cheaper than we are coming now. I mean, there is a year, 1996, where we held a conference in Limpopo, on witchcraft violence. And people came to that conference to say, make no mistake, we do practice. I did this and this and this, and that cannot ordinarily be done. Now, if we do have these people who have this knowledge, who can fly overnight to Limpopo and come back and in the morning they are here with us, or who can, I don't know how far they can fly, why don't we have a search done and go into that other science also and see how much of it can relieve our budget.
I'll give you just three of them quickly. One of the things that was suggested in research, it has happened already. They felt that actually there was no 2 points on Earth that could not be covered within 30 minutes. And therefore, that future flight would only take about no more than an hour if researched. Because if you take a flight from one corner to space, at a straight line from here to space and from space it drops there, I think the space is only about 200 kilometers, if I'm not mistaken. The space starts at only about 200 kilometers. So if we take a satellite, not a satellite, a spaceship, or a kind of a flight that is fast, goes straight into space and comes back, the only problem they said was that the problem is to have the people to be able to sustain that, because you know there are changes in force of gravity when you go there and when you come down when it lands. But that was the first option. The second option was that the Russians had made an experiment that future flights must only fly in next to up just about 2 meters or 1 meter above the sea. They tested it with what they called the Black Sea Monster, which was able to carry all the tanks or the war tanks and fly with them. It was a very big flight, but it flies over the water and so forth. And what happened, they said the prey, when it flies, it sits on the pressure that it creates over water. And they said, so aircraft of the future will not, in the future aircraft won't be there if they fly over water. And I read in a paper when I was in England that experiment was taken by a certain company in California. Those scientists that were developing that from Russia when the Soviet Union dissolved in 1989, they were taken to U.S. to research. So that research is going on. The last one was that because they've been experimenting with satellites, what they call this disc, what they call the flying objects that come and fly, UFOs, yeah. Then they created, that's the time when they announced a kind of a flight now which is going to take off from water, but it carries 2,000 passengers at a time. But it flies no longer in the way as aerodynamic shape that you know. It flies like that saucer. And the Russians also were building that. And I do not know what they had said, that in 3 years' time it was going to come up. I'm sure they are still polishing it up. And then it died away. I'm sure someone there is developing it. But we've got here people who deal with space. Maybe they'll tell us more about those ventures.
Chairperson, I feel you have missed me.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the science that we heard of as we grew. That still exists in our rural areas most of the time. I know even in some urban areas we still talk about that. That there was talk of two ladies who were on a loaf of bread. Like it happened in Zimbabwe in one village and it started raining and the loaf of bread broke and the other way, one fell, and the police had to come, and you know, it became a police case. I'm talking about that science. That is why I'm thinking of people being approached so that they can come out, because you will not easily agree that you are a wizard.
Indigenous knowledge system. Oh, okay. I didn't catch the indigenous knowledge system.
Which is called witchcraft. Point of order, Chairperson. Point of order. As fascinating as the sounds, can we get back to the presentation and the topic at hand?
I think these questions are for discussion. For now, we have only one clarification. I think we must stick to the clarification. When we discuss, even if beyond the hall, we can be able to ask some of the scientists here to explain, yeah, because otherwise we'll run out of management of time. I think the next member who was following Honorable Mabaso, I think.
If my questions are falling into general discussions, you know, the chair will just so. I was asking myself as we listened to discussions, to presentations that seeing that we are in a world infested by drugs, you know, at schools, you know, etc., and also weapons that are all over, and also oil spillage maybe onto the oceans, you know, and then we then find animals in the ocean die. But also the last point, I think 2 weeks ago or so, we heard over media that it was either a ship or a big truck that was carrying waste chemicals from UK, and it was coming to dump them in one of the countries in Africa. My question is it not possible for some of these things to be, for detection of these things to be done? Because if that could be done, that would also assist investigations and police.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was partly covered by one of the speakers who spoke about telescope in the Northern Cape. But my concern is, one is not fully aware what is happening there in the communities, especially if that is my constituency, Kanama. And they are asking questions of they heard that South Africa is competing, but with other world lands to for this thing. But why are nobody is saying nothing and they don't know? So in terms of education and information, what is are they really doing to assist the people there? Because in terms of the economic growth, it will assist those people there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My concern is the liability convention itself, which is on page 13. there was an explanation, but I just want a clarification here. Damage in airspace, which is absolute, that would be ourselves, as you made clear. South Africa would be responsible entirely for anything there. However, you know what worries me is, now, if one has outsourced or gone into partnership with another country to do the actual launching, will our calculations be used effectively by the launchers, by the other country? Or if they make a mistake in the interpretation of that data, surely is get the orbit wrong or something. Now, who's going to be responsible when that kind of slip-up occurs? Will there just be arguments backwards and forwards? Or is that detailed in the partnership agreement or whatever? Thank you.
Well, that was the last question for clarification. So I can give the presenters a quick few minutes to respond so that we can then have the next speaker.
Thanks, Chair. I've got 7 questions in total. Okay, the first question relates to the fact municipalities empowered to use data and what can we do for crime applications, as an example. And the lead-on question was on telemedicine. And the third question linked to the same speaker was universities doing research. Just on the municipalities themselves, and an example is that we, in the Satellite Application Center, they have an archive of satellite imagery. Okay. Now, we found out that some of the municipalities that were doing rural and urban planning, as an example, were looking at satellite imagery on Google Earth. Okay. Whereas there's much higher resolution data that's available at the Satellite Application Center, which they didn't know about. Okay. So part of the focus of the National Space Program is to empower those municipality officials. And it's also a question of training to allow those officials to use the satellite imagery, which is part of the program that we're looking towards. On the telemedicine, there is some work that's being done currently. I know the University of KwaZulu-Natal, they're quite strong in the telemedicine application. But I don't think it's at a stage that's essentially mature enough to the state that we actually want it to be. And the only way we can get there is by investing in technology platforms that will allow it to operationalize. And what we're talking here is essentially broadband or telecommunications aspect, using satellite communications, using some of the applications we use for remote sensing, but imagery, and looking at images that come from the medical fraternity, for example. So we have to do some development work around telemedicine, but there's still, as I said, there's a huge amount of scope that still needs to be done in terms of research and development.
The USA, it's USA, but it's a universal something agency. Yes. Is it not dealing with that?
Yes, the USA is one of the sponsors that is looking at some of these applications. And essentially what we're looking at is a doctor sitting in an urban area, let's say Cape Town, but tapping into a rural community where there is a huge, let's say a plasma screen, and you can see what's happening in the rural community, for example. And he can advise the practitioners on the ground as to what needs to be done to the patient. So he or she is having full access to the information at the other end. So that's essentially what telemedicine is. The same applies with tele-education, where you give kids access to educational material using a satellite platform where you're beaming the information down to the classroom, where the teacher is somewhere, let's say in the US or even somewhere in South Africa, one of the universities, for example. So those are the kind of applications we're looking at in terms of enhancing the quality of life in the rural communities. On the universities doing research, there is definitely a plan, and my colleagues from the University of Stellenbosch will especially touch on that, I hope. But what we're planning to do as part of human capital and building the expertise is we intend setting up what we call research chairs initiatives and centers of competence. Now, research chair is essentially an expert in his or her field that's located at the university that will be doing research in a specific applications area. Okay? And part of the mandate of that individual is also to build human capital, where he or she will have a number of masters or PhD students working with a particular individual. Okay, so that's one way of building human capital. And what we also plan to do is to set up what we call centers of competence. I've mentioned two my presentation, the optronics and the synthetic aperture radar centers of competence. And essentially the centers of competence will focus on technology platforms so that we can start investing in research and development around those technology platforms. Okay, so we're not quite at the stage yet to engage in those particular areas, but we need to do R&D in order to get us to that point where we feel it's mature enough to be used in our space program. So, and there, it's a kind of a networked kind of structure where the universities would work with private industry, would work with government, science councils, and so on. So there will be some synergy that comes through. And as I said, the focus of this research will be very kind of related to the technology platform, what the research chair is mandated to do. Then on the liability convention, the convention binding, is it enforceable? The convention that we're particularly talking about, essentially related to the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Use of Outer Space. There's a whole host of treaties and conventions. Now, the process is that you essentially sign these treaties or conventions, but at no stage are these treaties or conventions obligatory. So what we're essentially doing is, as I said, the first stage is to actually sign the convention and treaty. The second stage is actually to ratify it, where you get down to the national government level to endorse those treaties so that we can start applying them at an operational level. So as we're starting to build our space program, if you take the liability convention, we can hold our stakeholders to account based on the fact that we've signed the liability convention. For example, one of the activities of the Space Council is to license launch facilities, okay, which is related to the liability convention. So the Space Council will then keep a registry of who's doing launch activities and so on. So that will allow us to build credibility amongst the South African stakeholders so that when international communities want to engage with South Africa, there is that level of credibility, even though this convention is not legally binding. But I think it's a necessary step in the right direction. The same applies to the registration convention. You have to file for an application to launch a satellite so that you can use a particular part of the spectrum in terms of how you relay information to and fro to the satellite. So being able to coordinate that frequency and to make sure that your frequency that you're using is not interfering with other satellites out there is also important. So that's going to be quite critical going forward. The third question relates to the mission statement and it relates to human capital development and applications. This particular slide, I said that the foundations is infrastructure, international partnership, and human capital. Now, unfortunately, there's a lot more material embedded in each one of those that I have not covered. And there's a whole model that we're trying to adopt, for example, on human capital development that starts right at schools level, even after the individual has left university and has gone to work in the private sector. There is a program that DFC has started called the Professional Development Program, which will fund the individual for 3 to 4 years after he or she has left university, just to ensure that that individual gets some kind of in-training experience. So all of that is on the table at the moment that we are currently discussing. The important thing to note from the DFC perspective is that as a policy imperative, we've actually mandated all programs across the DFC to allocate 30% of their budget to human capital development. So whichever program that's been run out of the DFC, 30% of the total budget has to be allocated to human capital development across the board. So that human capital development is very critical and is high up on the agenda. Science that's controlled overseas, I'm not completely convinced of that argument. I mean, there's a lot that South Africa has contributed to science and technology. And in fact, South Africa is held in very high esteem in many areas. As long as we invest in research and development and operate at the cutting edge, I think we're going to make a good inroad in this. Our national system of innovation is very robust, and on Africa especially, I think we will probably be one of the highest, or if not that, the highest in Africa. And the reason why other countries want to partner with South Africa is that we're also seen as a gateway into the rest of Africa. So strategically, it makes a lot of sense to have those international partnerships as well. The fourth question was the metaphysical question. I'm not sure how to answer that. That's more science and technology in general, but not necessarily the space science. The fifth question was relating to the fact that there are issues with drugs, weapons, oil spills, and there was mention made of a ship with toxic waste, and are we able to detect develop applications that they allow us to detect some of these. Certainly, in order to realize these kinds of applications, there must be R&D that is invested on these technologies. And so, for example, the centers of competence that we're looking at allows us to develop technology in specific focus areas. And one of the centers of competence is actually looking at space applications. So, as much as the space agency is trying to coordinate all of this, a lot of these activities will still be done at the various department levels. Like the Department of Health will still have mandate when it comes to space applications that are geared towards the Department of Health. The same with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism will then look at specific applications for toxic waste and oil spills from ships and so on. The salt outreach activities, I'm not working at that platform at the moment, but I do know that this year and leading into the next year is the International Year of Astronomy. And I know that the Department of Science and Technology has done a lot. There's been official launches by a previous minister, and there's still ongoing activities that we linked to the international community on the International Year of Astronomy. It might be a way of an issue of ways this information is being packaged and disseminated in the local community. So it's something I can take back home refresh my colleagues as well. The liability convention, the last question that I had, are the calculations used by foreign partners, what are the implications in terms of liability and how do we pinpoint the actual liability itself? You're right, there are specific agreements, like for the launch of Simandila set, we have a specific agreement with the Russians, and part of the agreement actually alludes to how the liability is being handled and what happens in the case of dispute. So all of that is covered by international agreements with our partners as well.
Let me just add a number of few things to what my colleague has mentioned. The issue of coordination, which was asked earlier on regarding human capital and policy. Let me just explain one broad idea here, which as government we are trying to do. As the DTI has developed the policy, the policy is for the whole South African stakeholders. It's a national policy for South Africa. So as the policy is developed as a guiding framework, which is sort of putting down the limits of what can be done, what cannot be done, and how should it be done. Then in that manner, the DTI, the first, I wouldn't say as sort of an inspector in looking at other departments that are mandated to implement the policy, such as the DST, as they will be implementing a part of the policy or the greater part of the policy, including the area of human capital. So there is not going to be much of a problem. But the main important thing that we need to note is that we actually ensure that there is coordination. There are a number of areas that we have mentioned that will ensure this coordination. For instance, within the council, which is housed within the DTI, there are three committees, the regulatory committee, the Policy and Technical Committee, as well as the Advocacy Committee. And these committees are going to draw members from various departments. And these implementary programs will be discussed also at that level, as well as from the various fora that the DST is including, is establishing, such as air observation, research and development, as well as industry. Those will serve as coordinating mechanisms to ensure that we are doing what is spelled out in the policy and the strategy. Maybe we can give the university.
Yeah, I think we were discussing here with my co-chair. We have agreed, because looking at our time, we are left now with about an hour to do everything, including discussion. So, since we have three speakers still remaining to give, we will limit them to 15 minutes each, so that we remain in the last 15 minutes for discussion. And that makes 1 hour. So from now it's 12, it's almost around 12. If we allow ourselves to fragment our time in that fashion, I think we'll be able to cover everything. Okay, thank you very much. The next speaker then will be we have CSIR, Mr. Roel Hodges and Mr. Wabile Mbasil.
Rather than take it blow by blow on your work that you've got here, which is really extensive, will you please just extract the highlights of it? Because I think we've got a solid foundation now, and we're just adding to that. But the appeal to members much later on is to withhold their questions now until we have the three presentations. I'm sure some of you are in finance and other committees where that is done. So, starting now at 12 o'clock,
if we can begin that, please, right now. Thank you. You will remember, I did say at the outset that we would carry on for an extra 45 minutes. I was hoping we could reduce this, but we can't. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Can you please close the other microphone?
Thank you, Chair. Understanding the constraints in terms of time, I'll really attempt to talk more on the highlights regarding our presentation. I'd like to thank the previous speakers. They've done a wonderful task in outlining the framework of what we want to discuss about. So, if you just allow...
Excuse me. It looks like other members, I see some concerns they don't have the presentation.
We came with something like 50 copies. I imagine everyone should have an opportunity to receive a copy.
Okay, I think we can continue because copies are still there. I think those that don't have, they were not probably here when they were being circulated. But fortunately, we still have the copy. You can continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to quickly introduce the Satellite Application Center so that we understand the context in which it operates regarding the objective for today with regard to the conventions. The Satellite Application Center essentially is the research component with regard to space research and operations with regard to space in the CSIR. And we provide two primary services with regards to air preservations as well as space operation support. When we talk about space operation support, we really refer to telemetry, tracking, and command, and it's an acronym we use regularly in our daily operations. And what it really talks about is the capability of communicating with satellites in terms of measuring certain parameters, life cycle management, acquisition of the data so that we can receive it and process it and pass it on. In terms of the client base, I think it's important to recognize that with regard to the space operations client base, virtually all of them are internationally based. None of them are in the continent or in South Africa. We do look forward to the launch of the Sumandila satellite because that will give us an opportunity to also provide this type of services to our own spacecraft. The EOSC stands for Earth Observation Service Center, and this is really a centralized administration of the acquisition of the data, the processing of data, images from various type of satellites for the applications as it was already outlined in the previous presentations. If I may just quickly emphasize that with regards to EOSC, the stakeholders virtually all are locally and some of them extend beyond the borders of South Africa. Now with Earth Observation Service Center. With regard to the conventions we're discussing today, Earth Observation Service Center. Earth observations, yes, Earth, planet Earth. with regard to this particular slide, the DTI representative, the DST representative made a lot of comments regarding this. I will not repeat the bullets, apart from mentioning that from the satellite applications point of view, the what you see, those blocks, space policy, space strategy, and Space Agency Act, we see there's a significant process in our country in allowing or in creating an environment where organizations such as the Satellite Application Center can optimally operate and implement space-related activities, essentially for the country, but also at all times retaining our relationships that we already have established internationally. On that note, I'll skip this one as well. Extensive comments have been made in the previous presentations, and you will observe that it's rather similar. On that note, I'll also skip this particular one. Apart from the last bullet, which says cooperate with space-related agencies and other countries in the peaceful use and development of space. Now, in terms of identifying the role of SEC within the two conventions we have at hand here, from a state policy point of view, we remain supportive. We'd like to emphasize that we have been participating and contributing to the policy and technical subcommittee of the Space Affairs Council. In terms of the space strategy, we continue to remain supportive. And as we, our current operations and activities already contribute to the three priority areas as earlier mentioned. Regarding the Space Agency Act, we remain supportive, and the Satellite Application Center has been identified as an integral facility of SANSA. In summary, the Satellite Application Center is a significant role player in the local and international space industry, and SEC will become one of the space operations, in fact, the only space operations agency for Sumbandila said. And the last bullet really is SEC supports the ratification for the international conventions. And here we don't just refer to the two at hand in terms of liability and registration of objects, but we also refer to other conventions with respect to the International Telecommunications Union. This is an entity that controls allocation of spectrum, frequency spectrum, because you'll appreciate that spacecraft are in space and there's no other way of communicating with the satellite or downloading images from satellite without using frequency spectrum. The other conventions would be the COPUS one, which is a United body, United Nations body, regarding the peaceful uses of outer space. And what I haven't heard today yet, and perhaps it may help members of this house, is that if you consider the space shuttle, when it's normally launched by NASA from the States, it's normally that airplane-like structure is normally mounted on a rocket, and that rocket is meant, unlike rockets in missile systems, which are meant to cause harm and damage to your enemies, this particular rocket is meant to safely launch the NASA spacecraft into space. Now, in situations where such a rocket misbehaves for whatever reasons and it lands on land specifically, this is where the context of the discussions become so critical. And I'm taking note of the previous questions in terms of something to be more legal in terms of legal contracting. How securely can we have a contract in place that protects the country in terms of liability and so forth. I'd like to end this presentation with a quotation from a Polish physicist. His name escapes my mind at times. I think it's Chwalowski. And I found this quote rather apt in terms of what we're discussing. The Earth is the cradle of humanity, but one cannot live in the cradle forever. We heard earlier on regarding sources of light being of 300,000 years or so, and if one links the two, for someone like myself, space is really a domain that we love and we hope that we appreciate it to the same extent as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and I do hope your colleagues will take their cues from you. You were so succinct and certainly took into account that Ms. Majanda had actually dealt with a great deal of what was already in your presentation. So, you know that we'll be dealing with comments and questions through our fellow chairperson at the end of this week. So, please don't move from there unless you're all using the same computer, are you? Right. So, but if you would just stay close at hand here and then ask the others to come and join you, that would be Mr. Bart Saliers and Mr. Ron, is it on a fear? From Sun Space. And if you would simply pursue the example that has been put on the table previously.
Chair, thank you very much. It's certainly not easy, as my colleague has pointed out. I have 13 slides. I intend taking 1 minute per slide, if I can find it.
This is the chair. My name is Ron Olivier. My CEO, Bart Saliers, is at the back there, watching, keeping a careful brief over this. Like I said, I have 13 slides. I intend to take 1 minute per slide. We are associated in information systems. We are an industry manufacturer of satellites. We design, manufacture, and take the satellite hardware through the complete stage to a turnkey, up to the point where we will allow the further service providers, like Satellite Application Center, to be able to use the data that comes down from the satellite. The objectives, basically just a brief overview of satellites, current and future industry developments, our role as Sunspace in local international space industry, and then very brief on what SymbaNeelaSat is and what it's good for, and a few words on international space treaties. If it pleases the House, geostationary satellites, I think Val has touched on. I'm going to show a graphic just hereafter where I'm going to, it's not to scale, but I'm going to give it sort of a representation as to what it looks like out there. These are some of the main suppliers: Solar, Selenium, Space VDS, Lockheed Martin, Ball. The market cap of these companies that build these geostationary satellites are basically publicly listed. They're from about $4 to $100 billion, give or take, and their satellites cost from about, you know, about $250 million to $1 billion, also give or take. Then you have medium Earth orbit satellites. Main suppliers, basically the same as above, plus a few others, and the satellite costs vary because they have varying roles and varying uses. I will show some of that in the next slide. Low Earth orbit satellites, basically main suppliers of satellite, satellite technologies in England, Sunspace here in South Africa, Cetrec I in Korea, AstroTech in the USA, and SpaceDev in the USA as well, and there are many, many others smaller than us that supply components and that supply satellites per se. The market caps, well, basically we're mainly privately owned for about $400 to $100 million plus, so you can see it's not quite in the league of geostationary satellites.
100 times less or so, or 10 times less, depending on where you sit. And I'm using dollars simply because if we use rands, then the figures don't look too good. They start looking like our friends are from across the border. Satellite costs, basically from around $1 million to $250 million according to size for small satellites, medium satellites, and sort of largest low-Earth orbit satellites. I've used LEO, GEO, MEO, and I've explained more or less what it is. This graphic will give you an indication if I go over here to geostationary. They're about 36,000 kilometers from the surface of the Earth. And that orbit was chosen, as well as explained, so that it will be geostationary to a point at the Earth. So as the Earth turns in 24 hours, that the satellite in that orbit will also revolve around the Earth in 24 hours, so it looks like it's absolutely stationary. Okay. Geostationary satellites, mostly for communication, there's a couple of weather satellites there as well. Then in the MEO orbit, the Middle Earth orbit, these satellites are mostly for navigation. You have a couple of weather satellites over there, but navigation is put into that particular orbit so that it will allow for greater coverage of the Earth. And it's about from 1,200 to about 12,000 kilometers. Low Earth orbit satellites, which is where we basically play, is about 400 to 800 kilometers above the Earth. It's for imaging purposes, and it's put up there at that sort of height because it's just above the atmosphere and below the Van Allen belt so that it doesn't get damaged and stuff like that. It's also sort of the more ideal for imaging because it reaches the outer limits or refractory limits of your lenses if you go much further than that. I'll give a short low Earth orbit overview. There are large imaging satellites in low Earth orbit, the Pleiades, Spot 5, from France, Orbview, Iconos, QuickBird, they're all from the USA. There's OPIC from Israel, and ComSat from South Korea, and CASOSAT from India, and a host of others. And they all do the imaging thing, basically from, estimated performance from 0.41 to about 5 meters. Ground sampling distance. That simply means the spot on Earth that they actually can look at is that size. There are other satellites, obviously military satellites, that have a much higher ground resolution. There's suspicion of up to 10 centimeters. Small and medium low Earth orbit satellites. RapidEye, the German constellation that was manufactured by Surrey Satellite Systems and Jenna. It was project managed by MDA of Canada. NigeriaSat-2 that is being built in England at the moment. ELSAT-2 that is being built in France. That's for Algeria and for Nigeria specifically. The DubaiSat that has just been launched, built in South Korea. The odd thing out here is that South Africa is actually one of the few countries in the developing world that without this massive investment, past investment in space affairs, has a limited ability to build small to medium satellites in this particular country. So we can be reasonably self-sufficient like many big countries can be without the massive investment. The weight from Mandela is at 85 kilograms to about 230 kilograms of some of the other satellites like NigeriaSat and ELSAT-2. Performance from about 5 meters to 6.25 meters, ground sampling distance 6.25 meters being that of Sumbanyelasat. Estimated cost from about $8 million to $50 million US dollars, could be a little bit more, a little bit less. CubeSats are a small little satellite that are built by universities, mostly for testing smaller subsystems out in space. Okay, there's a couple of industry developments that I'm just going to brush over. Countries in the first world normally, and other countries in the developing world like Brazil and India and Russia, countries where the space energy is provided in their own needs, and they also try to provide for those who require excess. Sunspace is building upon its South African heritage and the GreenSat program and SunSat specifically with the objective of entering the developing world market with further products because there is a need out there. Okay, why small LEO? It provides the most affordable access to space. It can use our existing heritage in small satellites. So we sort of on a good weekend there. The complex Leo provides reasonably complex technical challenges without the cost of large projects or large programs, no billions of dollars or anything like that. Current developments, the developing world is waking up to small satellite possibilities, and this obviously provides a market for South Africa to enter into. There's a growing international demand for small satellites. The Americans are developing a TechSat program, military program that they call it, and they actually want to launch on demand within a couple of hours. It's still a dream. But that is where the world is moving. Okay, there's many countries competing for the development world's small satellite orders. Sunspace would like to compete as part of Team South Africa because it is a team event. In the local space industry, we're part of a large number of very small RSA companies that contribute to a local space effort. There's about 270 mums and pop shops that we get lots and lots of our components from. And they've done a lot of machining for us, and you know, the lenses that we will design will be developed by somebody else and manufactured by somebody else. We provide the small satellite hardware, software, as well as expert training for small satellite system design, development, testing, and operations engineers. We have trained engineers for a foreign partner, collaborative partner. We've trained engineers for the Malaysians for their effort on the DuckSat. We have also trained with the help of the DST and the great support of the DST. We have trained some engineers for the South African satellite program as well. Government support, we really need it. This international competition is won only as a national team effort. Sumba Dila said, Professor Herman Stein from Stellenbosch University is going to talk much more about this. I'm not going to say too much except that we know it's a pathfinder. The objective is to increase scientific and engineering knowledge in space systems. The satellite contains some heritage and some newly developed systems. What's it good for? Well, it was designed and tested for operational use to provide useful, scientifically useful images. If operating as per the design specifications. We all hope that it will do so. It was tested and it should do that. I'm not going to go through all that, but small satellite programs actually provide a very clear indication to the international community of the South African technical design capabilities, manufacturing capabilities, operating capabilities. It also provides a signal to very high level technical expatriates to return to our country, and for those who have thought of leaving our shores to remain here. Satellite control issues, we don't operate there, but there are various control issues for people to read. MEO, we don't operate there per se, we do not have assets over there per se, but we operate in LEO, and where there's no real mandatory control, and we lower the efforts that is being undertaken by the UN and COPIUS to undertake the sort of some sort of form of control. Technical expertise is required to launch into an unoccupied orbit. Other controls, there's some local controls. The MTRC, which is the Missile Technology Control Regime, missile technology regime is controlled by the Non-Proliferation Council of the DTI. There's a Wassenaar arrangement that's controlled by the National Committee on Small Arms or Conventional Arms. And the Council on Space Affairs obviously controls launches from South Africa. The international LEO orbit issues, the copious is trying to limit or eliminate, but has to accept that the existing debris cannot be removed because there's too much already. There's no affordable existing system that could be used to remove the existing debris. That is why COPIUS is concentrating on getting a legal framework together to regulate that particular issue. Okay, we know that. You know, LEO orbit space bodies are difficult to regulate without international cooperation forum such as Copius, and that access to international markets for small satellite manufacturers such as ourselves depend on our country being seen as a responsible space user. UN space treaties provide internationally recognized platform for responsible use by guarding against the misuse of orbits, launches, and provide legal cover from when space debris lands on one's soil. And our recommendation in that regard is that Sunspace gives unqualified support to the two UN treaties, namely the Liability Convention and the Registration Convention, under consideration, and urges Parliament to ratify both. Okay, South Africa is taking over in Baikonur. I've included a little fillip of what we were all talking about and what we're all excited about, and that is there. That gentleman there, if we can look up, is was one of the trainees. His name is Khaled Manju. He's one of the trainees that the DFT has sponsored. He is now the team leader in one of our AIT teams, the Assembly, Integration and Testing teams, and he's sitting right here in Baikonur testing Tupanilasat just before it will be integrated onto the launch vehicle, and that will happen, I think, the day after tomorrow or tomorrow, one of these days. As you can see there, the African, South African flag is there, and Tumbadila is standing under the tent like Michael Jackson, but it has not caught any cold or anything like that. It is in perfect health from what we hear. Okay. Thank you very much.
Certainly went very fast. I'm sorry to put yourself under so much pressure. But I'm sure that we will have another opportunity, and certainly science and technology will have even more opportunity to engage with you at
length. Yes, chief. Thank you very much. We are more than happy to get science into it. In fact, I'm currently in communication with the Committee Secretary for Science and Technology to do a visit to Sunspace and other areas of interest so that the committee can understand it.
Well, I don't want to say right now we will accompany you, but obviously that's under consideration. We certainly want that. But there will be a number of questions arising just now, but as I said earlier, it would be preferable if we got this at Stellenbosch University, just looking around, trying to see, right. If we would get Stellenbosch University Professor Herman Spain with us, and if you would also make your presentation at this point. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm just looking for the presentation. All the names of the presentations are the same, unfortunately. It was opened by you just now.
While we're waiting for you to just identify it, of course we're aware that a lot of points you've made have been already referred to by your colleagues, but I think our interest in you is really the institutional academic support that has been provided.
That's right. I will try and go fast through the slides. I don't have a lot to say. There's many pictures. My students also understand better if I show them pictures rather than a lot of text. Okay, so we just start off just with a bit of history. The University of Stellenbosch got involved into satellites, small satellites, in 1992. When we started the SunSat 1 microsatellite program, there's a photo of the satellite on the launch vehicle. More than 100 students participated in the building of the satellite over a period of roughly 9 years, actually 8 years, and then it was launched. The satellite was the first satellite of its size, only 50 kilograms, with a high-resolution three-band, three-colored camera on it, and the launch was in February 1999 from a US Air Force Delta rocket. The orbit
is slightly elliptical, and it means the orbit altitude varies between 640 to 850 kilometers, so it's not an ideal orbit for Earth observation. And the useful life of the satellite in orbit was about 2 years. Our last contact was in January 2001, and we expect the most probable cause of failure was a battery that failed, a rechargeable battery, due to an increase in temperature on the satellite. Or there's also people that think maybe the satellite hit a piece of space debris, but that's quite a slim chance that that can happen, but it is possible. This picture is interesting. It shows you the number of dots is satellites around Earth, and you can see close to Earth thousands of dots. That's all the lowest orbiting satellites, and they on the equator at 36,000 kilometers in a ring is all the geostationary satellites that we use for DSTV and telephone communication to Europe, mainly communication type satellites. And then there's also a couple of other satellites, dots that's not belonging to these two regions for navigation purposes, etc. There's currently about 30,000 or more, slightly more than 30,000 objects orbiting around Earth that's bigger than 10 centimeters in size. So 10 centimeters and bigger, about 30,000 objects. Some of them are satellites, some of them part of rockets and space junk, no longer operating satellites. This is an image from Sunset 1, taken off Zambia near Lusaka. The Sunset imager was 15 meter resolution, so that means every dot in the image is 15 by 15 meters in size. But this specific image was taken not directly towards Earth, but at an angle towards Earth, so the image size here per pixel is maybe 40 by 40 meters. So in the top right-hand corner, you can see a village in near Lusaka. You can see some agricultural activity. You can see rivers here to the left-hand side. So that's the sort of resolution that you can get from a microsatellite with a 15 meter per pixel resolution. At Stellenbosch University, we've supported mainly graduate students, masters and PhD students that want to do research in satellite engineering, and we specialize in the different fields of electronic and mechanical engineering, image engineering, image building images, handling the data coming from images, processing that data. We also give research and development support to industry, and consultation services, and also training of students and engineers for industry. And in the past, we participated with Sunspace. Sunspace is a spin-off company of the University of Stellenbosch. So some of the engineers or students that worked on the Sunset program joined Sunspace, and they are now engineers at Sunspace, building satellites. There's also two international companies, one from Malaysia, one from Saudi Arabia, that sent engineers to us to train for their own space programs in their own countries. So we're pretty highly regarded by international countries as well regarding our space or satellite competency. For SumandilaSat, we did the project support. The project management was done by the university, and also the systems engineering to make sure that the satellite was built to specification, and everything sound, and the satellite could be sent to Russia for the launch. That was our responsibility to oversee all that. And the ground station that will be used initially for commissioning of the satellite is also, for SumandilaSat, is also at the University of Stellenbosch. It's the same ground station that we use for Sunset. We also did the experimental payload on the satellite, the support for that, coordination for that. And we trained 20 master students and 2 PhD students with other universities over in the country during this project. They received bursaries from DST to do their master's and PhD degrees in satellite engineering and space science. Currently, we're involved in a CubeSat project. A CubeSat is a
10 by 10 by 10 centimeter small box, very small, weighing only 1 kilogram, and we're currently involved in a project with the Surrey Space Centre at the University of Surrey in England to build a CubeSat that will demonstrate solar sailing. It's like a sailboat using the sun to fly in space. So we will demonstrate that. We will be the first in the world to demonstrate that if it happens. So currently we hope it will happen in 2 years' time. The Simandilastat mission objectives, I think it was mentioned also by Dr. Minsami. It's a Pathfinder mission, so everyone should understand that it's not a commercial satellite, it's a Pathfinder satellite. That's the name Simandila means lead the way vendor. So it's a Pathfinder mission for the development and growth of people and institutions to provide satellite imaging data for applications to address the needs of society, and also to understand the processes, the modalities of a small satellite program in order to inform what we currently busy with, the space policy progress and processes in South Africa. This is just a slide showing the different aspects you have to look at when you want to build a satellite, the instrument, the space camera, what is the application you're going to use it for, who is going to launch the satellite into orbit. That's a very expensive part of the whole program, as you will see on the next slide. The satellite bus, the satellite itself that will once be launched in orbit and do all the imaging from space. And then human resource development is also very important to us. We've trained, I think, about 40 students that were sponsored by DOC in the past in satellite engineering at Stellenbosch University. That is mostly students from previous disadvantaged groups with university degrees, and they did their master's degree at Stellenbosch University. This is the Simandila satellite. So for those of you who haven't seen it before, it's roughly the size of a washing machine, a tumble dryer type washing machine. So it's not big, 84 kilograms, and it will be launched into a 500 kilometers orbit, a sun-synchronous orbit. That means every morning at 9 o'clock it will pass over your ground station, and every night at about 9 o'clock as well over the ground station. But roughly two passes in the morning and two passes in the evening, around about that 9 o'clock time. It has a 6.25 meter resolution, so you should be able to see houses and maybe big trucks on roads, but not much more than that. You will not see people walking in the street, for example. In 6 spectral bands, so that means 6 color imager, and from that you can extract a lot of information about vegetation, for example. What type of plants you're looking at? Is it dry? Is it healthy? That sort of information. We also have an email communication system for the Department of Communication as a payload. It wasn't mentioned by Dr. Minsami, but that was sponsored by DFC. And the main reason for this is telemedicine. We want to reach remote areas in South Africa where you don't have cell phone reception or telephone lines, and there's clinics there, and they want to order their medicines or they want advice from doctors, and we can order that via the satellite. You send a message, an email message to the satellite, and once over the ground station it will be downloaded onto the internet and reach its destination, and the other way around as well, to reply to the email. The satellite will have a propulsion system to do drag compensation because of the low altitude. The life of the satellite, if you don't compensate for aerodynamic drag, will not be very long. It will last 2 years maybe in orbit, and then it will re-enter and burn out in the atmosphere. So we, with the propulsion system, will extend the life to about 5 years. 3 years we will actively control and maintain the altitude at 500 kilometers. In the last 2 years, it will degrade and eventually burn out in the atmosphere. The project cost, for those interested in that, the satellite cost was roughly 16 million rands. That's extremely cheap in the sense of international terms for a similar type of satellite. The launch is a very expensive part of the whole cost, 7.5 million rands just to launch the satellite in orbit. We also had to pay for insurance to ship the satellite safely to the launch site if something happened that we can
then have money to rebuild the satellite, but it's not insured once the satellite is launched. So if something happens in orbit, then the satellite is lost, unfortunately. Because that's cost a couple of million rands, and mostly after launch, everything will be fine. We also have an academic training part to the project, 2.5 million rands for bursaries and to support students to be on the program, and there was also 7.5 million rands paid to train interns, engineers at Sunspace in satellite engineering, and of the people trained there, I think more than 70% stayed behind and is now working in the space industry. The launch of the satellite will be, as mentioned, on the 15th of September, 5 minutes to 6 local time. So you can think of the launch then at that time, specific time, if you want to. It's from Baikonur in Kazakhstan. It will be on a Russian Soyuz rocket. This shows you the rocket. Sumandilasat is roughly small. Okay, I don't have a pointer there, but below the that way. So on the rocket, that small black dot there, this is the Sumandila satellite. The rest of the satellite here is a small Russian satellite, and the big one there is the Russian weather satellite, Meteor weather satellite. So it will be launched from the northern hemisphere, from Kazakhstan, and first into this blue orbit, where the big satellite will be released and the other small satellites. And then specifically just for us, they will lower the orbit to 500 kilometers, that red one there, and that is where Sumandilasat will be released. And the first part over our ground station at Stellenbosch will be roughly 5 minutes to 9 on the 15th, Wednesday the 15th of September, so it's about 2 weeks from now. The imaging applications, I think people mentioned that already. One thing that I just want to highlight here is that we will also monitor our fishing resources to see if there's any vessels that illegally fishes in our waters. We will look at water quality levels, groundwater, ground coverage, and plant health. So it has a lot of agricultural applications specifically. So this is just an image to show you the expected images that we can get from the satellite, the resolution of the images. If you look straight down to Earth from 500 kilometers at a 6.25 meter resolution, and you can clearly see buildings and streets, and even if you look closely on a better quality screen, you will see cars on the roads. And this is only a 5.8, roughly 6.4 kilometer image of or a window of the full image. The full image from Sumandilasat will be 45 by 45 kilometers. So this is only a small part of a full image that you can take from your satellite. And this is Stellenbosch, where we come from. You can see the university buildings there. This photo was not taken from a satellite, but from an aeroplane, but we've resampled it so that it will give you an indication of what can be expected. So once we have an image from the satellite, we will surely show you how it will look like. If you look at this graph, it just shows you where we are now at this stage. In the corner, left-hand corner, on the bottom horizontal axis, we have the mass or the size of the satellite. On the vertical axis, we have the performance. And performance goes very much along with the price, the cost of the satellite. So in the lower left corner, we have Sunset 1 as a very cheap university program type satellite. And then slightly up, higher mass, higher performance, is Sumandilasat. And then hopefully the next satellite will be the MSMI satellite. MSMI stands for Multi-Sensor Microsatellite Imager. And the camera itself has already been built as an innovation fund product, funded project, the innovation fund of the DST. So we have the camera already, and we just need the satellite. It will have better resolution than Sumandilasat, and it will also carry a hyperspectral camera that will give you a lot of information about what type of plants you're looking at, what is the health of the plant, etc. And then on the top right corner, that's the future, maybe in 10, 15 years from now, is to have a sub 2-meter resolution imaging satellite or synthetic aperture radar type of satellite built in South Africa. So the MSMI satellite, with that we can do a lot of science and further research from space. And for this type of satellite, you need in situ measurement as well. So you need ground measurements as well to combine with the satellite measurements. And there's a lot you can do doing that. This is just showing you the color spectrum on the horizontal axis. What you normally can see with your naked eye is colored from blue to red. And then the satellite imager with the hyperspectral part can see even to infrared, and plants normally reflect a lot of energy in that region as well to tell you what specific state they are in. Okay, that's my presentation. Thank you very much. This image here was taken by another satellite that was built by Sunspace, I mean, and you can see clearly on a highway somewhere in Europe, you can see the white dots of cars driving around on that road. So it can be done from space. It's not that we haven't done it before.
Professor Hermannstein, thank you very, very much. Just so that all of us presenters as well as members know how the rest of the program will operate, it's about now 22:01. We would like to finish no later than 1:05. But I'm also going to ask Honourable Ntuli to join me up here, and I'll be leaving shortly. But I just want to make one thing clear that, you know, if you look at the purpose of this briefing, it's really for the formal consideration of the Convention on International Liability for Damage Caused by Space Objects, one, and also the formal consideration of Convention on Registration of Objects Launched into Outer Space. And the purpose of the briefing with our Portfolio Committee, Science and Technology, was to give us some understanding of this area, especially people, members, honourable members in trade and industry. And I know that there will be another opportunity for us to further engage and to get a better insight into this. But right now, my appeal would be to focus on the purpose of the briefing and to do so without preambles and just very shortly ask our questions, clarifications, and have discussions. And I will be at this stage handing over the chair to my fellow chairperson, Dr. Nkobo, who is from Science and Technology. And we hope that that will then close the briefing at 1:05. Thank you very much. So it's over to my fellow chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the interest of time, as the chairperson has said, I think I'll allow, again, as we said initially, that we will allow for some interaction now, discussions, which will be very focused. I hope that
indicate that tomorrow, of course, the briefing was to prepare us for the possible adoption. When I say possible, because quite obviously we don't have to adopt, but I think our intention is, if we are satisfied, and certainly something is beginning to move in that direction, we would then adopt this, and that would then allow our Sumbandula, the Pathfinder, to head out into space. But it will be a joint committee meeting tomorrow. And we do want to start start no later than 9:15. There'll be tea at 9:00. And it'll be a short meeting because the minutes will be done of trade and industry next week. So there is only that item on the agenda for tomorrow. And at least you'll have the continuity chairing from my colleague here. So I think that's quite clear. It's going to be in Mark's building, room 46.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I'll then allow you to enter into discussions with the presenters, taking a note of what you've just said. I see Honorable Dolly, I see Honorable Shin, I see Honorable Vaso, in that order. Right, in that order, yes.
Thanks, Chairperson, and I just wanted to find out from the presenters politically, like this Somalian pirate, if they cannot be detected, or is it just an omission, or is it done deliberately that they cannot detect these pirates which are robbing off the ships on the sea? Because if you look at the technology, it means then up there they can be able to see who is there, or what are the reasons, or is it because they are not part of it, of the pact, particularly those who are trading there? I just want to check that particular. Secondly, it's about disasters, particularly in South Africa, where you find that every now and then people would be caught unaware. Is it not possible to detect that in a particular day or in a month there will be some disasters of a particular kind in a particular area? Or is it because we do not have those capabilities? Just to check those, if you've got any clue, or is it just neglected? Thank you.
The next honorable member.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple of questions. Excuse me. Who's going to be responsible, which agency institution is going to be responsible for managing the program of applications that's done from the satellite? Is it the satellite application center, is it the university? Who's going to say this is going to be a climate change application, this time this is going to be a traffic monitoring application, that time? Who's going to be the scientist who's going to go where? Then what is the geographic spread of the area we're going to be monitoring? Are we going to be monitoring quite a lot of the ocean, for example, the Southern Ocean? Because I believe that's a major contributor to our climate change studies. And then when will it become operational? You know, one presumes that there's going to be an awful lot of timing and testing, you know, before we actually sort of, you know, switch to actually produce something worthwhile out of this thing. What time frame are you expecting for that? Thank you.
Bravo.
Thanks, Corinne, Chairperson. My question is, I would assume that for all these objects that are out there in the outer space, the international world as a unit, I will assume that the international world is taking responsibility for all the objects that are out there. Is there a possibility that there are some objects that are there without the knowledge of the international world? And if it is so, should it happen that they fail and fall, is that not going to cause a disaster? And then the second one then would be that is it for the countries that don't have the capacity, how do they protect the space that's directly above them?
Mine is actually close to Member Julie's one. In the Eastern Cape, especially in the old area Transkei, there are areas there that there's lots, I mean, disasters, you know, the Makosa, in Kanyamba, all this. They take place almost every year. Is this going to assist in the warning signs? Because it seems every time they happen, we get caught, you know, not ready for that. Perhaps to check if the world is that advanced, what made it not to foresee the tsunami that happened a few years ago, which was such a disaster? Was there a warning which was ignored? Or those countries perhaps do not participate? What could I'm just interested, perhaps it does not fall here, but I think it would be proper if such satellites are able to detect such matters.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I also have some few questions to ask you. Now, who is going to maintain this satellite up there? Because it's launched from Russia. Certainly, if there is anything which goes wrong there, someone must go there or must do something. I know the Russians, they usually go up to repair their satellite up there. Who is going to do that with us? Because we are not controlling that technology. Secondly, usually such projects, they result from collaboration. So which countries are you collaborating with in developing this technology, if any? The last one is Sumbadila owned by the Department of Science and Technology, or is Sunspace owned by the Department of Science? Or what are the relationships between the department and Sunspace and the satellite in terms of funding, for instance? I just want to get those ones clear. I think we'll allow the respondents.
One more small question. This is a bit of a contradiction or misunderstanding here on my part. We said that it passes over its ground station four times in 24 hours. One of the things we said. And then one of the other presentation said it can see the same point in South Africa every 3 to 4 days. I don't understand the difference there.
Of the department and the delegation.
Thank you.
Chair, it's Bartel here from Sunspace. Firstly, as to the detection of specifically the Somalian pirates, as you may have seen in the photographs in the paper, they operate from very small speedboats and attack huge tankers, which are many times their size, and get on board and basically take the crew hostage. Now, with the Somalila-type satellite, the resolution that we can get is nowhere near good enough to be able to see such a small boat in a vast ocean. And also, it's extremely difficult, even if you have the resolution, to be able to determine which small boat that you are seeing contains pirates or not, because there are many vessels at sea. So the view that I would like to put on the table is I think it will be of very limited use for that particular purpose. However, when it comes to illegal fishing vessels in our waters, then obviously a good photograph will show where they are, and the coast patrols can go out and apprehend them and in that way enforce the boundaries that we have for fishing waters. As far as disaster detection is concerned, it's best to monitor things like informal settlements being developed in traditional flood areas. And if storm conditions develop, then obviously those communities can be warned, but it would probably be better to direct that those communities don't actually develop informal housing in flood areas like that. When disaster fires break out, you will get images from time to time that will give you an indication of how the fire is spreading and what direction it's taking. In terms of the other questions, I think that the only one where we still have an input to give is the maintenance of the satellite. We have proposed to DST that Sunspace continues to monitor the satellite throughout its entire life. From a health point of view, a satellite health point of view, checking on a daily basis the data coming back from the satellite to see that all the systems are working properly. But in terms of the actual application and use of the satellite, that will be governed by DST, but the physical work, I gather, will be carried out by the Satellite Application Center in terms of national priorities. So various missions will be compiled for the satellite, and these missions will be administered by SAC. The images will be processed and then distributed to the particular users that use those satellites. Chair, if there are any other questions that Tanspe has to answer, I think please remind me.
I didn't hear about the collaboration.
Sorry, Jim, may I add to what Bartel said? In terms of the identification of suspect vehicles at sea, there is a system called the Automatic Identification System. It's something that's carried normally on board of satellites, and you will have a transponder on ships, and these transponders will communicate with satellites all around the world to identify themselves as this ship or that ship. That in time that will make it easier to distinguish between rogue ships and just normal shipping traffic. But right now that system is not fully operational. And Sumanila said does not have an AIS on board. The AIS was not developed in time to put it on board. So maybe by the next satellite we will have an AIS on board of that satellite. The AIS is on board, I think, at least one other satellite so far.
But I think the honourable member was asking about other, those that are already there that are big from big countries, why are they not able to detect them?
I would not be able to speculate on that. It is very difficult to see a small area when your area of operation and your area of concentration is perhaps your own coast.
American satellites would normally look at their areas of operation at their coasts or their war theaters or that sort of scenario, and not necessarily concentrate on what is happening, well, too much concentrate on what is happening elsewhere. That is why we are happy to say that in keeping with what the DSD has said, we need to have our own resources to monitor our sort of airspace and our ground space for ourselves.
Thanks, Chair. I think about four or five questions I guess to the DST. The first one is related to the responsible agency, especially for the programs of the applications. Now, as I've alluded to before, we're setting up the South African National Space Agency, and part of its mandate is to look at the satellite applications. So we've worked with other departments in terms of defining specific user requirements, and I've alluded to the three key priority areas, which was environmental resource management, health, safety, and security, and innovation and economic growth. And under each of these key priority areas, there were a number of user requirements that was essentially reflective of other government mandates. For example, the Department of Environment Affairs and Tourism, health, and so on. So the government departments essentially still remain responsible for the mandate, whether it affects environment or tourism, whatever the case may be. But the space agency is essentially providing satellite imagery that empowers those government departments to make the decisions that are necessary. Okay. So the space agency is responsible for acquiring the satellite data and building the satellite and so on, but ultimately the government departments at the end are still responsible for those mandates. I think there's a question around how do countries protect themselves if they don't have a space program? This has been a long-standing issue in UN COPIUS specifically, and it affects the issue of sovereignty, where does sovereignty start and end? And there's a distinction between air law and space law. You know, if you launch a rocket, it goes through sovereign space before it ends into outer space. And by the Outer Space Treaty, the outer space is for the benefit of all mankind, and you cannot claim sovereignty. So if a satellite is flying over South Africa, it is in outer space. It's not in our sovereign space. Okay. So I just wanted to make that clear. There's no sovereign claim in outer space, essentially. The disasters in Transkei, why wasn't this, sorry. Yeah. Disasters in Transkei, are we able to detect or forecast those disasters? And I think that's what we're moving into. Very often when we talk about disaster risk management, we talk about response to disasters after they've happened. But what we're also trying to look at is being able to forecast some of these disasters before they actually happen. And so you actually can mitigate some of the risks involved in those disasters. And that's something that we're working in as part of the formal space program. That's in the pipeline, to speak. Which countries are we collaborating with in developing the technologies? At the moment, most of the technology is being developed in the country. There are a few strategic partnerships that we are kind of starting up. What we have done 2 years ago is we've started done an industry audit as to what exists in our industry, and that also gave us a sense as to what weaknesses exist in the system. So if we want a sustainable space program, we have to be able to plug those weaknesses that we've identified. And that's where we will start engaging with international partners who have the competence to help us to address the weaknesses. And so that's a step that still has to be undertaken. And we're hoping that once the agency is in place that we can start doing those identification of those international partners. At the moment, we've just got a relationship or the agreement with Russia. We're also looking at a possible agreement with India. And then the African continent with the ARM, we're looking at Algeria, Nigeria, and Kenya at the moment. But we'll probably expand those partnerships once the agency is up and running. The relationship between DST and sound space, and particularly affecting Mandela Sound. DST actually put out a contract for the design, development, and manufacture of Mandela Sound. Stellenbosch University is a prime contractor, who then contracted Sunspace to build the satellite. Okay. So the satellite actually belongs, or DST owns the satellite, but in terms of operations, the satellite has already been developed, but in terms of the operations and mission control, Sunspace will, together with Stellenbosch University, will be responsible for the initial mission phase of the satellite. Thereafter, I think the Satellite Application Center will come into the picture as well.
Okay, Mr. Chair, let me ask or answer a couple of questions here. To continue on the, is there some object there that's not known to anyone? No, the Americans and the Russians has got radar facilities. They know of every object that orbits around Earth down to a size of about a fraction of a centimeter. So they can detect all objects that launch into space. And for SumandilaSat, for example, less than 12 hours after the launch, we will get orbit data from SumandilaSat, orbit parameters, it's called, so that we can track the satellite after receiving that parameters from our ground station. We will know exactly when the satellite will appear, when it will disappear from our local ground station field of view. So countries will know about satellites that's orbiting over them. It's not unknown. All that information is available via the internet, so you can get all the information about satellites orbiting around Earth. The only satellites that's geostationary is those above the equator, so no other satellite can sit above your local locality forever. It will orbit at very high speed over you. The lowest orbiting satellite is about 7 kilometers a second. So it will take a satellite from Cape Town to Johannesburg, for example, just 10 minutes to orbit around the Earth. Okay, the specific questions about geographic spread of monitoring. So SumandilaSat will be in a polar orbit, so it will orbit over the north and the south pole. And as the Earth rotates below the satellite, every 100 minutes, orbit will be completed, and the satellite will then cover a certain area below it as it orbits over the Earth. And due to the rotational speed of the Earth itself, it will not cover successive bands next to each other. So that's why your visibility of a certain location on the ground is only every 3 to 4 days. So every 3 to 4 days, it will be able to take an image of Cape Town. It doesn't want to take an image of Cape Town by looking at the horizon that's 3,000 kilometers away, because your image will just be hazed and it will be very bad resolution. But you can still communicate with the satellite every day, 3 to 4 times a day. So it's a good question. For communication, you can do 3 to 4 times a day, but for imaging, only every 3 days, you will orbit
in such a way that your distance to the ground will not be more than 600 kilometers, and you can take a very nice high-resolution image of that area. When will the satellite become operational? When the satellite is launched on the 15th of September, it will take about 4 to maximum 6 months to commission the satellite. During that time, we will also commission the imager and the download of the images. So I would say after about 2 to 3 months, we will be able to download images, but we still need to test out all the various subsystems on the satellite, and that can take up to 6 months. If something doesn't work properly as it should, you have to sort out the problem remotely. You cannot go there and fix the problem. So unfortunately, we don't have the facilities to send a space shuttle to Manila-Sat and fix it. In any case, Manila-Sat is too high above the Earth's surface. The space shuttle can only go up to 350 kilometers, and we're up 500 kilometers. So not even the Americans or the Russians can go and fix our satellite for us. It's too high. Then there was a question about tsunami forewarning. It's very difficult to predict when an earthquake will happen, and that is really what starts a tsunami, is an earthquake in the ocean somewhere. That causes the Earth's surface to shift, and then a lot of water to be pushed upwards and then to flow towards the continent. And during that time of flowing of the water to the continent, that causes the damage at the coastal areas, that can take minutes or maybe hours. So during that time, you have enough time to predict from satellite imagery or maybe from ships in the area. You will get a sooner warning than from a satellite, because the satellites will not specifically always look for tsunamis and altitude variation in the Earth's surface. I think I've covered roughly all the questions. There was also a question about are we collaborating internationally on our program? Yes, we have built SunSat and SumandilaSat and all the satellites here with internal knowledge. By the end, some of the subsystems, like the solar panels of the satellites and the batteries of the satellites that we bought internationally from international companies. But the rest of the satellites fully indigenously built by local engineers using local knowledge. But some of the engineers did study overseas as well, or visited universities and companies overseas to gather knowledge as well and bring back to South Africa. So the world is not a closed place, so we can collaborate internationally to gain all the knowledge to build the satellites. But it's really a local effort. There was no private or international company involved into whatever we did up to now in the satellite engineering field. Thank you.
Are we done? Is there some report? Okay. I think some members are very hungry now. It's time for lunch. Actually, we've overstayed by about 12 minutes, but it was worth it, I think. Members will agree with me. We have had a very good brief about satellite engineering and technology. And I hope that, in particular, our colleagues from training industry will be able to look now with better focus on the ratification of the convention. But tomorrow, as you have said, the chairperson of trading industry has apologized, has got some sick challenge at home, and so she won't be here. She apologized, but she has asked the whip of the committee to assist me tomorrow, and so we'll continue tomorrow with the guidance of the whip. I don't know if whip wants to say anything now at this stage for tomorrow.
No, thanks, Chair. I think let let's say we meet tomorrow, then we'll be able, if whether we do adopt or tomorrow morning, we said we'll start at 9, then we'll take it from there. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Ibaza. I hope everybody, well, at least was clarified a bit about the space, the science and so forth. Tomorrow we'll be all on board and understand this. Yeah, there's a plenary debate too. Yeah, some members are reminded about plenary. Thank you very much, everybody. And thank you very much to all the people from the department for bringing us all the understanding about this space. And we hope that we will...